We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked with Red Wings' Manny Legacy about the tough job of being a goalie in the NHL in Detroit, of all places.
Have you ever experienced that situation where you give up a couple soft goals and then you make that real easy save, that floater from 60 feet, and you get that sarcastic applause?
Yeah, many times. Yeah. That was my second year here. I let in two bad goals in the first period, but you know, when they were booing and we were losing 2-0, and they did that, you know, the shot from the red line, they're all like, ah, you know, screaming, and then those are all in the first period, right?
Yeah.
So we come into the third, we're up 3-2 now.
Yeah.
I make two big saves, now they're chanting my name. You know? Yeah, I'm like, oh God, you guys are awful.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program on the Riff. 101 Riff Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit.
Foremost, it's yours as well as mine. So we have a phone number. It's a local Detroit area phone number because this is where we broadcast from, although we welcome people from all around the country. And I was thinking, yeah, the other, how many weeks ago was it? We had a call from Shanghai, China. I don't know who was picking up that tab. But actually, phone charges have really dropped dramatically, haven't they? So maybe it was, I don't know, 15 cents a minute, something like that. Anyways, main number here in the Detroit area, 313-298-WRIF. And I have no idea what the numbers are for that. That's odd. I've been doing this for a while. But it's 313-298-WRIF. Email calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. There's another email associated, address associated with this program. I usually don't even look at that, maybe once a week. So, don't bother with that one. My website is peterwerbe.com. P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E. .com, peterwerbe.com. Lots of new stuff on there. Pretty amazing stuff as well. And you know, it's like I'm not bragging because all I did was saw it, copied it, and pasted it. But it's it's everything that's on there is available somewhere else, but kind of bringing it all together, I think, does something for me. All right, big march in Washington, very, very important in this period where George Bush, as the caped crusader for the far right wing, is attempting to eliminate a woman's right to choose. One of the chants was, get your rosaries off my ovaries. It might be a little offensive to some people. My apologies if that's the case. But this is a secular nation, dear friends, based on secular concepts. And it was done so because of the fear of the intertwining of religion and the political state. Because the founding fathers had experience with that, knowing what had happened in Europe. People came here. Of course, to find religious freedom in a sense. I mean, some of the people that came here, it could have been the Puritans. They came here because from Holland because there was too much. You ready for that? There was too much religious freedom, so they didn't. They didn't like that. There was too much religious tolerance, so they didn't want to stick around for that. Now, so there's this big march, and there's a lot of it that's extraordinarily important, as far as I'm concerned. The organizers think that there was 800,000 to a million people in attendance. They had obtained a permit for 750,000, and say they exceeded that goal. In many ways, there's not a real way to tell. But there, as it says here in the New York Times online, a vast multitude of protesters marched here today in support of abortion rights and to highlight what organizers contend is the Bush administration's erosion of reproductive liberties. Because even though a majority of people think that the state ought to stay out of those kind of medical private decisions that were affirmed in Roe v. Wade, there is still this militant far-right wing group that thinks that the political state ought to determine the, a woman's choice and a woman's reproductive rights. So in that, I think it's about 85% of legislators are men, and probably 80-85% of the people that would enforce a ban on abortion would be men. So you have men enforcing on women what should be something strictly between, it should be a family matter. What happened to the idea of getting the government off of people's back? I mean, the only time these conservatives ever want the government off their back is they want to be able to pollute streams or stuff like that. Right? Then they want the government off their back. On the other hand, they always want the government to intervene on these personal matters. These, what they want to elevate to the level of criminality, stuff they don't agree with. And in this case, religiously determined. Now, I'm not trying to take that away from anybody. And if you don't think there should be abortion, don't have one, number one. And number two, use gentle persuasion to convince others not to do so. That's pretty easy. Isn't it? Doesn't that sound like a democratic way? Doesn't that seem consistent with democratic principles? But no. These far-right-wing freaks are always trying to get the political state to enforce their view of theology and biology on the rest of us. So they want to make the people that we know, the women that we know that have had abortions for whatever reason, into criminals. And, there's what they call a missing referent. Something you're referring to. So they say, abortion is murder. Yeah, that's one of their far-out slogans. Abortion is murder. So you say, then so who's the murderer? Right? So you have the victim is this fetus, which they've elevated to human status of a child. Heard some woman say, 40 million kids have been killed, and I care about kids. I mean, come on, what sanctimonious crap. Can't believe it. Anyways, that's not even what I'm on about. I mean, you're welcome to think it's murder. You're welcome to think that it's whatever. But just don't try to get the political state run by men, enforced by men, to determine women's decision about reproductive rights. Doesn't that sound fair? Doesn't that fair? I mean, because no one's forcing anybody to have an abortion. But see, the political right, which always talks about freedom and liberty, is really at its root coercive, punitive, authoritarian. They want to determine for other people they want to enforce their view on other people. It doesn't get much more authoritarian than that. Anyways, here's some of the things that occurred to me. There are no official estimates of crowd size. A 1992 march drew 500,000. I was at that one. Man, there was more than that. CNN, citing local police, estimated at least 250,000 people participated today. So that's why, they're going to start driving down the numbers. And this is, in a way, what this is about. If you want to comment on any of this, I can't imagine that anybody that was there is back unless you flew. My wife and I were going to drive there, but then I wouldn't have been able to do this show. That's why I stayed. Because if it would have been on Saturday, I would have gone for sure with my wife. Total number of my friends went. 313-298-WRIF. So CNN, citing local police, estimated that at least 250,000 people participated today. So they could have said at least 10,000, because there was at least 10,000. Although the real estimates are 800 to a million. Now listen to this story. This is by Elizabeth Wolfe, Associated Press writer. Abortion rights supporters marched in the hundreds. First off, the headline, if you only read the headline, it says thousands march for abortion rights. Well, thousands, as far as I understand it, means anything between 2,000 and 9,000. Doesn't it? That's thousands. So if you only saw the headline, you'd say, they got not very many people there. Tens of thousands would be anything between 10,000 and 90,000. When you get up to 100,000, that's hundreds of thousands marched. So, you know, I've worked with newspapers. Everything you put in there, everything you read, let me put it another way, everything you read has been put in there by someone who has determined exactly how a particular story should be framed. I'm not saying there's a big conspiracy, although sometimes there is. But political agendas are worked out in how things are presented. You may or may not have heard me say before, give me a set of facts, give me a set of quotes. See, you go to this march, March for Choice, abortion rights supporters, and give me all the information as you, as the reporter on the scene, and then I'll be the copy editor. I'm going to put this together in a story. You want it to look pro-abortion? I can make it look pro-abortion. You want to make it look anti-abortion? I can make it look anti-abortion. You want to make it look, on a sense, even-handed, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. I can make it look even-handed. So objectivity is just a loda. It all is how you present these words and on television, you know, the images. So right away, the numbers are reduced in the headline. Thousands march for abortion rights. Could have said hundreds of thousands, because if you think, oh, maybe they didn't have enough room. It says thousands march for abortion. That's on one line. And rights is all by itself. So they could have easily put hundreds of thousands. All right. Abortion rights supporters march in the hundreds of thousands Sunday, galvanized by what they see as an erosion of reproductive freedoms under President Bush and foreign policies that hurt women worldwide. Well, that's pretty good. Amid the clamor of an election year, yada, yada. Speaking below, beyond the masses to policymakers, Frances Kissling of Catholics for a Free Choice said, you will hear our pro-choice voices. That goes and continues. Women joined the protest across the nation from nearly 60 countries, asserting that damage from Bush's policies is spreading far beyond U.S. shores through measures such as the ban on federal money for family planning groups that promote or perform abortions abroad. So Bush hurts women in other countries because he's marching to this far right wing agenda of these compulsory pregnancy people. Those are the people that have dared to call themselves pro-life. Actually, what they are, they're the compulsory pregnancy people. How in the world they ever got that successful PR title to be accepted by the entire media is, of course, is another story. All right, so we get down to 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph in this AP report by Elizabeth Wolfe. The rally on the National Mall stretched from the base of the U.S. Capitol about a mile back to the Washington Monument. If you've been there, you know this is big. Authorities no longer give formal estimates, but various police sources informally estimated the throng at between 500,000 and 800,000. All right, so lots of people there. So let's go to our dear friends at Foxhole News. Far right wing, I don't know, they've got some slogan that says, they present it, you decide, or something like that. And it's Associated Press. So then you start realizing that essentially it's a rewrite of Elizabeth Wolfe's piece, which is okay. You can do that in the media. Abortion rights supporters marched in large numbers Sunday. But listen to that. In Elizabeth Wolfe's piece that she submitted, because she was there, abortion rights supporters marched in the hundreds of thousands Sunday. Foxhole News changes it to abortion rights supporters marched in large numbers. And then they go on and on. Essentially, it's the same, except that paragraph that says that there was 500,000 to 800,000 strong is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. Instead, Foxhole News inserts one of its own paragraphs. Authorities no longer give formal crowd estimates, but suggested the crowd was over 100,000 strong. So now they've reduced it, even beyond CNN. CNN says there was at least 250,000, and we have Foxhole News now saying that it is at least 100,000. And this is the kind of, you know, this is how people gain these twisted views of the world. I mean, they trust these sources. I mean, part of it is they want to trust these sources. We've brought to your attention, I don't know, I'm using a royal we. I have brought to your attention before that the more people watch Fox News, the less accurate information they have about the world. I mean, it's very perverse. But, I mean, completely intended. The other thing is, I was coming into work and I was listening to this boring all-news station. Oh, man, is that bad. I don't know. I mean, it gets good ratings. so boring. But they so here was their story. Up to 800,000 women marched today, women and their supporters. So I thought, hey, this is very cool. They're actually giving the big number. 800,000 women marched, but not everybody agreed. And then they say a small group counter-demonstrating felt that abortion was wrong. And then they give this extensive quote from this woman who opposes abortion, talking about 40 million kids have been killed. Now, there are, I can't remember how many people come out for these compulsory pregnancy marches. I think 100,000, something like that. They've had that. Yeah, about an eighth the size of these. Have any of you ever heard time given to the other side, to the pro-choice side? Of course not. Now, on television, and I heard this on the air as well, so I can't cite it. I can't remember what station or what program it had, but it said one television network had Karen Hughes on. Karen Hughes just wrote this book, Hagiography. You know that Hagiography? It's the life of the saints that she wrote about life in the Bush administration. Pardon me. And so they had her on television to give another view of abortion. Now, can you imagine that when there are these compulsory pregnancy marches in Washington, that they would have a pro-choice person saying, giving another view of compulsory pregnancy? I don't think so. So, I mean, the ability of the American people even to come up with the limited sense of reality that we do is really amazing when we have this constant flow of dis and misinformation. And where is this one thing? Oh, yeah. For instance, the majority of Americans still believe that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. I mean, this extraordinary high figure, 57% of us said they believed that, that believed that Iraq was either directly involved in carrying out the 9/11 attacks in New York or provided substantial support to Al-Qaeda. Of course, of this number, 60% said they intended to vote for Bush. But even Bush has said there is no connection, yet people continue to believe this nonsense. And also, let me see, wasn't there another one here? There was similar confusion with respect to the weapons of mass destruction. Nearly two-thirds of respondents said they believed that most experts had said that Iraq had them, 30%, or that the experts were evenly divided on the issue, 35%. I mean, this is astounding stupidity. Now, if you're thinking, wait a minute, I believe that they had weapons of mass destruction, or you're thinking, he's calling me an idiot because I think Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. Well, yeah. I mean, think about, why do you believe that? What is your belief based upon? I mean, I've had people look at me. You get that look and they say, well, I've got a sneaking suspicion he was involved. What the hell is a sneaking suspicion to begin with? But if you ask for some concrete sources, there isn't any. I mean, Bush said Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with September 11th. I mean, they confuse it all the time. They say, you know, the battle against Iraqis. Right? We're going to liberate them. Now we're fighting them. We're going to destroy their cities because they're not going for our colonial rule, right? In the meantime, what is it, 720 Americans have been killed, thousands of Iraqis, including tons of civilians. And so, you know, Bush himself says there's no connection. Nobody says that Saddam Hussein had any weapons of mass destruction, and nobody had to because they didn't find any. So where does this ignorance and stupidity come from? Well, partly the media itself is to blame. Partly all these, now these news sources like the New York Times are saying, tisk, tisk, how could these people believe this? Well, they reported all this crap to begin with. Excuse me again. All right, I'm going to go right to the phones. My name's Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. PeterWerby.com is our, website. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. Jay Hudson is our phone screener and producer. Dan Letarski is assisting him, and we welcome you. All right, we're going to go right to line four. Hi, this is WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Welcome.
Hi, Peter. My name is Marla, and I just came back into town from the march in D.C. We're just now getting home.
Great.
And can I tell you, it was a really powerful and moving experience. That 800,000 figure is probably a low estimate. There's 2 miles between, the National Mall is 2 miles between the Washington Monument and the steps to the Capitol building,
mm-hmm.
and it was wall-to-wall people.
I know.
Women.
Well, if you go to my site, and then it'll take you to other sites, you can see this throng of humanity that is absolutely unbelievable.
Right. Well, I've been in the car since we left, so I haven't seen anything on the news yet. But just being there, I mean, it was amazing. And there were men and children and women, and I got to listen to Hillary Clinton speak and Wonder Woman, Linda Carter, and I was always pro-choice, but now after experiencing that, I feel mobilized to get this country up, get the silent majority who is pro-choice to
sure.
go out there and vote.
Now, I'm sorry, your name was Carla?
Marla.
Marla. All right, all I need is an M there. Hey, Marla, had you ever been to a demonstration like that before?
Never.
Well, they are pretty energizing, aren't they?
Definitely, and then 100,000 people doesn't even come close.
I know. And did you see any evidence of counter-demonstrators?
Very few. Out of all the people that were there for pro-choice, I counted 4 people that were anti.
Well, they probably had them on the nightly news, too. Sometimes, like my wife and I went to an anti-war demonstration. Where, I can't even think when it was. I mean, sometime before the Iraq War. And there were probably more people. You know, they put out all those porta-johns?
Right.
Well, there were probably more people in the lines to use the porta-johns than there were all the counter-demonstrators. And then we go back to this hotel that we were staying in. And we're watching the news, and then so they have all these people giving, you know, on the anti-war people giving real decent statements, and then they give equal time to these pro-war nuts.
Exactly.
Even though there is probably, 300,000 of us and under 200 of them.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. How did you find out about this, and how did you wind up going?
Well, I worked for an abortion provider in the Detroit area for about a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was all, we were in on hearing about the march and hearing about the organizations, trying to get everybody pepped up to go now and NARAL and Planned Parenthood. So
did you,
got real excited.
Did you take one of those buses that were provided, or did you go on your own?
No, I went on my own with my husband, Brian, and a friend, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
She's also worked for the abortion provider as well. So we just hooked up, decided to go on down and experience a protest, and it was fabulous.
No, that's good. Actually, my wife said to me when we were reading about this, she said, "See, I told you we should have gone." Although we wouldn't have been back. You must have been doing some driving.
Yeah, we hopped in the car about 1:30, so we missed some of the rally, but we have to get back for work in the morning. So.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for the report, Marla.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us.
Okay, rock on.
All right, definitely will rock on. Yeah, it's about a 9-hour drive. If you drive real fast, you can do it under 9 hours. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter Werby?
Doing well.
Good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you.
I've been out of town for about 8 years and come back. It's tough to find good talk radio.
Oh, isn't it?
Here's my question to you. After seeing all this carnage and all these American deaths, do you think we should have really gone in and really gone in Iraq or just stay out of that?
Well, I guess now that it's all said and done and the bodies are coming back and we're leaving quite a trail of death and destruction, and we're gaining what? I don't even know what we've gained there. I think it was a hideous decision.
Uh-huh. Okay, I just wanted your answer question on that. Take care. Have a nice evening.
Okay, thank you. I guess he hasn't been listening because we've been talking about it. Okay, I guess we're probably, same thing is happening here. Let me see. Low volume. By the way, your streaming volume is very low this time out. I don't know if the entire stream is low. This is, sometimes the callers are. All right, we're going to be working on this. I appreciate, because I know a lot of you who are just sick and tired of the fact that virtually all there is available is far-right-wing talk radio. And you know, over half the country doesn't agree, and probably only about a third of the country agrees with these right-wing psychos that are so popular on the air. But, I mean, figure it. Third of the country, that's enough to get listenership in the millions, right? So my apologies if it's not coming over the way that we would like it. All right, where are we going? Jay Hudson, thank you very much. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, it's Molly.
Hi, Molly.
I'm on my way home from the March for Women's Lives in Washington, D.C., and I wanted to call in and say hi and give you my two cents.
Sure, and actually that's the official name, wasn't it? March for Women's Lives.
March for Women's Lives.
Yeah. Well, Fox News said there was at least 100,000. Marla thinks there was a lot more. What do you think, Molly?
Yes. Anybody who listens to Fox News, you know, has it coming to them anyway. There were at least a million people there.
Really?
At least. And I think that's a conservative estimate. I was at the march in 92, and this, I've never seen anything like this. It was phenomenal.
Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as far as those, they're calling them, you know, those anti-choice people, there are a handful of what I call crazies. I mean, they were just kind of standing there, you know, moving their lips, just kind of standing around, but that was about it.
Well, how did you happen to go? Because I was asking Marla about that caller before. What got you to go to Washington?
I'm on everyone's list. I don't know if it's NARAL and NOW and Planned Parenthood, but I went with my father and his wife, and you know, I'm not just pro-choice. I'm pro-human. This wasn't just a march about women. It was a march about the fact that the government's trying to force individuals to make physical, sexual, and personal decisions that has nothing to do with them. And I just, you know, I've had it. So I figured I should go and make my point.
Well, you know, I'm really mixed because I don't know if you heard me saying, but that my wife and I were going to go. If it would have been on Saturday, yeah, we would have been there.
Yeah, but it was really, I wish more people had gone, only because it was such a fantastic experience to see that many different people agreeing on so many different levels.
You know, Molly, if you think about it, this may have been, I'm trying to think, may have been the largest political demonstration in the history of this country.
You know, that's what people were saying today. A lot of people were saying that. There were a lot of people actually on the mall who had been there in the 60s for a lot of the anti-war movement, and they were saying that this is the biggest thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, those demonstrations in the 60s were in, you know, the hundreds of thousands, but like half a million. You start talking up, getting up towards a million. Well,
yeah.
That's an outpouring of humanity. And I know that, here, you drove from Detroit to Washington, which is 500 miles.
Yep.
But there were people coming from all over the country.
Oh, can I tell you, there were people there from Alaska.
Really?
Seriously, there were contingents from Alaska. There were people from, there were a lot of people from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
People have had it with Bush. There were people from California. I mean, there were people from Canada. So it was pretty cool.
One of the reports said that there were people there from women, and I guess, you know, women and men, probably mostly women from 60 different countries. And one of the things that we forget about, I mean, usually it's here just trying to fend off these religious people that want to have the government intervene on the personal lives of women, medical decisions of women. But they said that the damage from Bush's policy goes way beyond the U.S. shores through Bush's policy to not allow any U.S. money to go to like Planned Parenthood groups in countries that need it.
Oh, yeah. This Bush agenda is dismantling international health care, period. And everybody knows it. Everyone who's paying attention to what's going on around the world recognizes that. And if they don't, they're not paying attention.
Well, Molly, thank you so much. I mean, one hand, I'm kind of beating myself up for not having gone. But like I said, had I gone, I probably would not be back. So I wouldn't be doing the show.
But you know what? We're glad. I'm glad that you're there, because you are the only person right now in the media who's actually being honest about what was going on today. So I'm glad that you are there.
All right, Molly, thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care. Love the show. Hey, will you tell Drew and Mike that we missed them on the mall?
You know, they don't like Bush anymore.
Well, good for them. Just let them know.
Right, thank you very much. Yeah, they used to be big fans of Bush till, they put the hammer down about this decency thing. I was looking at something. Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to open this, I think. But one of the groups that does so much support for us here, it says, hey, Peter, if you could mention that WhiteRoseSociety.org is having a fundraising drive to buy a new server, I would appreciate it. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Now, Ben Birch, who is centered in Chicago and streams this program and does an archive edition of it, you got to put some bucks on that to let these people be able to spread. Not just my show, because if you go to WhiteRoseSociety.org, you'll see that there's the archives of lots of other programs. So when people say, well, damn, I can't stay up that late or I miss your show, you can always go. In fact, you can go to my website, peterwerby.com, and go to On the Air, and it'll show you the people that are cooperating around the country in making sure that programs like this, not just mine, but other programs like this, have an expression beyond just the time frame that we're in. All right, continuing on, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
I've got 3 points I'd like to make. First of all, you seem to be surprised that the government wants to make decisions, medical decisions for us. They already have been for a long time. For instance, we can't have ozone therapy. We can't have therapies that aren't approved by our FDA anyway. So they've always been really, trying to control us. So it's nothing new.
Yeah.
That's my first point. The second, the thing that bothers me about abortion, Peter, is the fact that there's been 45 million abortions since 1972, and there's been about 80 million births, and one-third of the new generation coming up has been totally obliterated and, sucked down the sink.
Wait a minute, so you really are into this compulsory pregnancy thing, that you think that every woman that gets pregnant ought to be required to bear to full term?
I think the choice to not have a baby should come with birth control, but I don't think abortion should be used as birth control.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion, and you're welcome to it, and it's like I said, if you want to gently try to persuade people of that, but why does the political state have the right to intervene on a private medical decision in the lives of a woman to enforce your view of things?
Well, because, the people that are against abortions, I think, look at it as murder, Peter.
Well, and I mean, that they're welcome to do it, but they can call it whatever they want. I'm talking to you about whether or not the political state has the right to intervene in a personal medical decision about a woman's reproductive process.
Well, it comes down to just, not being able to murder. And, I can't take someone...
Wait a minute. Now, murder is a capital crime. Murder is enshrined in virtually, I would say, all cultures since the beginning of organized societies, 20,000 years ago. Now, the idea that abortion is murder is pretty new and pretty unique. Now, you can raise new ideas and old concepts can be changed, but you're really on some dangerous ground. So if I told you that my wife had an abortion, you'd say she's a murderer?
What? There's everybody.
Well,
I don't judge people.
Well, good.
I don't judge people.
Well, I mean, if you call somebody a murderer, that's a judgment.
It's murder. I didn't call anybody a murderer.
So, well, but then that's what I was saying earlier, this phrase called the missing referent. If there was a murder, like in Clue, Mrs. So-and-so did it in the library with the candlestick, or is the doctor a murderer?
Well, you can't take someone to the hospital because you don't want them to exist anymore. And when, people, when a genetic code is formed, that's a human, Peter.
Well, that's your theory of biology, which is fine. I mean, try to convince other people about it. But in the meantime, when there's not general agreement, and historically within English-American jurisprudence that life begins when the child can breathe on its own when it's exited the mother, That's the only time in previous history. And it's like I say, I mean, maybe things will change. I mean, things change in terms of social concepts. But I doubt if this is, because women have always had abortions. Women are having abortions today in all these countries that do not allow it, all throughout this hemisphere. There's only three countries in this hemisphere that even allow it. But in all those countries where it's illegal, millions of women have abortions. Now, why do millions of women have abortions? Why do you think?
Well, I just don't think the state should pay for it. We should
Now, then you're not answering my question. Why do you think that women, for instance, in Latin America, why do they have abortions, even though it's illegal, and even though most of them are Catholic, they still have them?
Have they aborted one-third of their next generation?
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. I got to do my commercials.
This is the Riff award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Walt Michael Army Center, the ultimate recreational superstore.
You're sure to find an RV that your whole family will enjoy at our spring open house sale going on now. Hi, Christine Michael here for Walt Michaels RV. Now save big on a 38-foot Coachman Shasta Oasis travel trailer with dual bedrooms. It comfortably sleeps 10, and Walt's spring open house price is only $17,999. Or take your family on a tour of America and sleep with Flagship, the 37-foot Pace Arrow with dual slide-outs for as low as $679 a month. That's with 20% down, 7% financing for 240 months, and you're traveling like a rock star. Hurry in. Walt Michaels 7th Annual Spring Open House Sale and Sunday, April 25th. Come and see us. We're on the North I-94 Service Drive in Belleville, also known as the Walt Michaels RV Mile. Give us a call at 800-697-2500. We'll be looking for you.
Remember your first kiss? But remember the look on your friend's face when you told them? Remember your first car? But remember all the fun places you went in that clunker?
Uh-huh.
Remember your first hangover?
Oh, my God.
Remember getting there? Well, it's time for another first. You're buying your first home. Now you need to get a mortgage.
No.
But who should you call? There are so many mortgage companies out there. Who can you trust? This is a big decision, and you don't want to make a mistake.
We're Arlington Mortgage. We understand and promise to make your first home buying experience a pleasant one. We realize this is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. At Arlington Mortgage, we'll take the time to learn as much as we can about your needs and match you with the mortgage that's right for you. Call Arlington Mortgage today at 866-525-2600. Let us do all the work. We want to make this a memorable experience.
That's Arlington Mortgage. Call them today at 866-525-2600. Let Arlington Mortgage be your best first experience.
3.75%. That's the low rate American Equity Mortgage is now offering you as homeowners. 3.75%. Hi, this is Ray Benson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. With a rate like that, you can save hundreds of dollars every month. Think about it. What will you do with the extra money you suddenly have when you roll your car loan and all that high-interest credit card debt into one new loan with one low monthly payment? Save for your kids' college education? Finally get those home improvements done? Take a dream vacation this year, maybe. Put more of your hard-earned money in the bank. 3.75%. Whether you have perfect or less than perfect credit, call American Equity Mortgage. We make it fast and easy. Pre-qualify in minutes on the phone. Get loan approval in a few hours and close fast in as little as 1 week. 3.75%. Call American Equity Mortgage now.
888-229-7699. 888-229-7699.
Open till 8.
Rate subject to change. APR 4.23. Rate subject to increase after confirmation.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Your wife probably thinks she knows you pretty well. Here's a way you might keep her guessing. This Mother's Day, just when she thinks she's going to get the same old, ta-da, you really surprise her with a gift from J.B. Robinson Jewelers.
For 75 years, the experts at JVR have been, well, experts at helping guys like you find the perfect gift. They ask the right questions and have all the right answers. Like an extensive selection of beautiful three-stone diamond rings in round or princess cut from $299.99 to $7,000. And as always, JVR is a 90-day money-back guarantee. Just remember these love letters.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
Mr. Pro Sports Heckler Guy.
They say those who can't play coach. Apparently those who can't coach sit 30 rows back, shirtless, shouting obscenities.
Look at me.
Thanks to you, our team is armed with game-winning tips like catch the ball and throw it.
Shout it out now.
You stink. That sucks. What a bunch of losers. Not just catcalls, but subtle psychological ploys to prod your team to victory.
Reverse psychology.
So here's to you, oh Sultan of Shouting, because we all know if you don't have anything nice to say, say it really, really loud.
Mr. Crow's boy, hey.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
My name is Michelle Allison, and I think outside the bun.
Michelle Allison thinks outside the bun.
When my husband and I were designing our dream home, we thought, why limit ourselves to one architectural style when we can combine different ones?
Michelle's not afraid to mix it up.
So we decided on Southwestern Adobe for the first floor and Art Deco upstairs.
Michelle likes dynamic combinations, so she loves the delicious diversity of Taco Bell's Cheesy Gordita Crunch. It's a crunchy taco covered in three melted cheeses, then wrapped in warm, pillowy flatbread. A soft yet crunchy textural taste sensation that refuses to be pigeonholed.
Believe me, the drawbridge ties everything together.
Connoisseurs of tasty combinations love Taco Bell's Cheesy Gordita Crunch because they think outside the bun. At participating locations for a limited time. Craving a taste for late night excitement? Taco Bell is open late so you can feed your need for all the spicy, melty, crunchy stuff you crave. Spice up the night. Think outside the bun. Open till 1 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. We're talking in part about the million. Of course, I guess there wasn't a million. There was not a million people at the Million Man March, were there? But it looks like there may have been a million people at the March for Women's Lives, the pro-choice, pro-abortion rally that just occurred today in Washington, D.C. Foxhole News, the conservative news network, CNN, and others trying to diminish the number because they're trying to diminish the political impact. And also, in every report, unlike when there is compulsory pregnancy marches or activity, the other side, the anti-choice, the compulsory pregnancy people, are given a wing at the people that turned out in such amazing numbers, even though those people didn't turn out anybody. Here is what Rizpah says. And they wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and actually I did just do this. Please remind people that there have always been abortions. Women had them and didn't tell men. Midwives used to perform them. The medical profession took the right away from the midwives and then took it over evilly and cleverly, but the main point is that this always went on. Abortion is nothing new. Men being involved in abortion is new. Remember, because they said essentially it's going to be male legislators and male police enforcing a law. I love your show. After a week of right-wing nonsense, it is always refreshing to hear your voice. Man, that's the way I feel. I mean, what toxic pollution goes out over the airwaves? And Rizpah says, I also agree from what I saw on TV. I think they got pretty close to a million for the Women's March. Let's see. This is from April. April says, love your show. I just wanted to throw in my two cents about abortion. I don't quite feel that it is murder, but I believe that a woman should be completely sure about it before she aborts the fetus. Well, I agree with you, April. There are people who just irresponsibly mess around and have abortion done for the hell of it. Well, Anyways, that's one of my reasons why I'm against it. Well, what about the people that think about it seriously and didn't irresponsibly mess around? And what about the people that responsibly messed around, that don't want to bring a child into the world, or for economic reasons, or for reasons that are really none of our business? Because people say, they use it as birth control, or they just do it for the hell of it, like you're saying, April. Whereas I'm saying it's none of my business, nor your business, why a woman decides to abort a fetus. She says, I'm not for the government regulating it, but if people are going to do it, they might as well do it so in an environment where they won't get killed while they're doing it or die because of it. Actually, that's good. I agree with you completely, April. One more. Gary writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Just wanted to let you know that 3,500 casino workers remain on strike that has lasted for almost a month. Today, thousands turned out at the riverfront in Windsor for a rally in support of these workers. Despite the inclement weather, the rally was a success and showed the strength of the labor movement in Windsor as it stood in solidarity to demand a fair agreement at what is the city's largest employer. Wow! What happened to Chrysler and Ford? Hope you can alert your listeners to the struggles the workers face. Yeah, don't gamble at Windsor Casino. In fact, throw away your money here in Detroit. I've got an idea, by the way. Maybe when those casinos first came, I floated this idea, and I wanted to tell the mayor, but he just wouldn't buy it. And that is, you wind up, you go in these casinos, they're filled with smoke. It takes forever to lose your money. Sometimes you lose it like that. But what you could do, you could just have these attendants with barrels. You could just, roll up there and just throw your money into the barrel and take off. You could go do something. So you wouldn't have to, screw around inside of these casinos for a long time. All right, let's move on. We're at line four. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. I've never heard your show before. Great show.
Thank you.
So
appreciate it.
I want to say, first of all, so make sure you say, when you're on before you end.
Okay, it's just Sunday nights, 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Eastern time.
All right, it's a great show. I just wanted to comment on the Iraq situation you were talking about earlier.
Sure.
And all the people that say, Saddam's this big bad guy and we have every right to go in there, remove him from power, destroy the entire country doing it. This is the guy who bailed us out in the 80s, as everybody remembers, the gas crisis.
Sure.
When nobody else would sell it to us, and then took that money and made the universities and the colleges over there. And, Saddam, is bad of a person as he might have been personally, really supported education and brought civilization to a country that had no money.
Well, I got to say, on the other time, it's like saying Mussolini made the trains run on time, though. I mean, you got to think of what's the dominant characteristic of a particular government. Yeah, that society, because of its oil revenues, had become a jewel. And both the 1991 war and the sanctions and now this catastrophic, illegal, unnecessary invasion has sent it into a tailspin. I mean, most people now say that, I don't know how they could say anything differently, that Iraq is much worse off than they were under Saddam Hussein.
And that was pretty much, my point there. And as bad as a person as he was, they still weren't as bad off as now. They have, no leadership whatsoever. They're governed by a country that's 3,000 miles away, and we're not even doing that well.
Well, I don't even get it. I mean, how gave the United States, who gave George W. Bush and Paul Bremer the right to be the colonial overlords to decide who should rule and who shouldn't rule and what the nature of the government should be? I mean, the United States is declaring people as enemies that are what? Who? Iraqis.
Right, and for no other reason. It's a job that was unfinished in 91 that, in my opinion, he's just going to finish what his father started.
Yeah.
His father should have finished when he had the support of all the other people that, before he slaughtered all of them with the chemical weapons, 10 years ago.
Well, Bush won. Bush Sr. wrote about why he didn't try to take over the entire country. You know why?
This
said?
The very reason.
Yeah, exactly, because it would wind up just like this. Exactly. Now, Bush says America will never be run out of Iraq by a bunch of thugs and killers. Now, this is interesting. The United States, since last March, has killed perhaps 25,000 Iraqis.
Right, then you have to wonder how many did Saddam kill, you know? We're just replacing one bad guy with another one, and we're the bad guy now.
Our
people are over there dying.
I know, and I just wonder.
I'm 21. These are my friends that are over there.
You know people that are there?
Their lives in danger.
Do you actually know people that are there?
Yeah, I know three or four that are over there right now in the infantry, and, you know, I'd sit at home, and I wonder, you know, when that note's going to come in the mail to their families that, you know, these people have died in vain.
Do you get anything like email from
them? Yeah, I talk to them all the time. I talk to them letters. A few of them are back. One of them's in California now. You know, it's in my opinion, it's a waste of time. We had no reason going there in the first place.
Yeah. And what do they think? They're over there.
You know, the Army has a tendency to brainwash. Yeah, as funny as it sounds, you know, I talk to them and, you know, everybody's pretty gung-ho about it. Some of them, you know, they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't go in there with that mindset. You know, that's what my friend was telling me, you know. You have to go in there thinking you belong there. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be done.
Send them my website. My last name is spelled W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. Ask them what they think about it.
I definitely will. And, I want to make one other short comment on your abortion topic. You know, I'm 21, like I said. I met my girlfriend, who I'm still with, when I was 15. She was 13, and, you know, as stupid as it is, you know, she got pregnant. She was 13 years old. We had no other choice. You know, I'm 15. She's 13.
Mm-hmm.
We had no reason, you know, first of all, we had no reason having sex in the first place, but we did. But, you know, was that a, you know, reason to bring a baby in this world that, you know, I would have worked as a manager of McDonald's, you know, making $10 an hour, busting my back for the rest of my life, sinking into a hole to support a life that we just couldn't have given the proper time and, you know, as expensive as it is.
Well, I got you, but you're really being a guy. I mean, the real person that would suffer would be the mother, your girlfriend, and the child. I mean, having a 13-year-old give birth to a child, even though these compulsory pregnancy people say, oh, we'll adopt her. You know, this is what I call the breeding sow theory of adoption. You know, they want compulsory pregnancy, and then they'll, you know, they'll gratefully, or not, what was it, not great, they'll willingly take the baby. That is, of course, you know, if it's white and everything like that. So these people are a pack of hypocrites. Hey, thank you very much. Thanks for listening for the first time. All right, bye now. Talking about the dead in Iraq. This is from Daniel, lives in Livonia. He said, "Dear Peter, I had a friend who was killed in Iraq at the beginning of the war. I found out from his family of his death, but following his death, I found no information nor news coverage about it. I felt like he was dishonored and unrecognized. Those photos of those coffins in the Seattle newspaper and on TV made me very happy." I don't think he meant joyfully happy. "I felt that he finally, his friend, got the recognition he deserved. I hope we can send those photos to the White House to show Bush and Cheney that this is the cost for their profits." And then, you know, one of the people that let these photos out, this cargo worker and her husband, who photographed flag-draped coffins of U.S. soldiers who were fired. And John Kerry says, "I believe that keeping faith with those who served also requires us to understand the sacrifice they're making to honor it when they come home to the fullest measure." Well, Bush does one thing. As the president of all the corporations, his mainly is to rob the American people and the rest of the world for the profit of his pals. But right now, his eyes are on one goal, and that's to get reelected. So what does he see that these coffins, these flag-draped coffins, represent? Not the waste of the, or the honor of, however you want to put it. I mean, whatever kind of interpretation you have of how these young lives, and sometimes not so young lives, ended in Iraq. Bush doesn't want them shown for one and only one reason, because it'll interfere with his ability to get reelected. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
That's good. I had some comments about your topic tonight.
Yeah, sure.
I'm kind of knee away when it comes to abortion. I could say that I'm pro-choice, and I could say that I'm pro-life at the same time. But really, I feel like these issues, along with a lot of others that are discussed in our country, are just offshoots to keep people from realizing the everyday needs that aren't met by our government and our establishment.
You mean like the fact that we're now paying $1.83 average gasoline, and that tons of other stuff having to do with the economy is never even mentioned?
Yes, a lot to do with the economy, education, health care. If these things were a bigger issue and provided for, I feel that this country could be a lot more level-headed and not so bogged down with these offshoot issues that kind of distract us from reality.
Yeah, well, that's it. Facing reality instead of all these side issues, I agree. Hey, thanks a lot for your call.
Your opinion matters. Call 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call and more of your calls coming up.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Springtime in the Motor City, weather's starting to warm up. What could possibly be better? How about a brand new Chevy truck from Joe Pannion Chevrolet? Hey, it's Meltdown here, plug in Joe Pannion, where they'll always give you an unbeatable deal in a Chevy. This month, Joe Pannion's celebrating Truck Fest with $1,000 bonus cash on almost every Chevy truck. Picture yourself tomorrow, waking up for work, cracking open the curtains, and seeing that sleek, brand new Chevy truck in your driveway. I mean, why go to work? Drive around, for God's sake. Dump that beater. Make your neighbors jealous. Stop down to Joe Pannion Chevrolet and pick up a truck. DVD players they got for them, custom wheels, subs, exhaust systems, everything. They can fix your truck up exactly the way you want to. Check out the Silverados, the Tahoes, Trailblazers, and more, all marked down, ready for immediate delivery. 866-JOE-1111. Give them a call. 866-JOE-1111. Take that tax refund. Head down to Joe Pannion Chevrolet. Tell them Meltdown sent you. Put yourself in a quality truck. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
Gather around, ladies. It's time for your Molson bedtime story.
Oh.
All right, it was 11:15 at the Molson Brewery. What do you do at 11:15, Tiffany?
I take a long, hot bubble bath.
Oh, my. Well, every morning at 11:15, the Molson brewmasters and their handpicked staff gather to taste that day's beer.
Beer.
But no one is allowed to have coffee, candy, or gum, as they may compromise one's ability to effectively evaluate beer.
No candy, but I love candy.
Well, we all love candy, don't we?
Yeah.
Why 11:15?
Well, that's when the taste buds are at their peak. The end.
I think my taste buds are at their peak right now.
Oh, mine too.
You know, let's conduct a taste test of our own then, shall we?
Okay.
Go to MolsonUSA.com to find out more about our Saskatchewan barley and what it means to you. And find out about the latest Molson events in your area. Molson, making friends since 1786. Imported from Canada by Molson USA, LLC, Golden, Colorado.
More Night Call with Peter Worthy. Next on The Riff.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
Now, Eric Clapton is back. Live at the Palace, Lohand is coming, featuring the hits of Eric Clapton to the blues of Robert Johnson.
In the sunshine of your love.
The 12-time Grammy Award winner, Eric Clapton.
Let it rain, let it rain.
Eric Clapton, special guest, Robert Randolph and the Family Band. July 13th, on stage at the Palace. Eric Clapton live. Tickets are on sale right now. CC.com, PalaceNet.com, the Palace Box Office, Ticketmaster, or 248-645-6666. The Master returns. Eric Clapton.
Detroit Tigers baseball is back. See your Detroit Tigers take on the Anaheim Angels Tuesday, April 27th through the 29th at Comerica Park. There's crazy savings going on every day at Comerica Park. Check out our weekly lineup. Tuesday is 2 for Tuesday. Buy two $12 upper reserve tickets for the price of one. Wednesday is McDonald's. Kid Crazy Wednesday. Kids 14 and under get a $15 mezzanine seat for just $7. And that's not all. Thursdays are Triple Play Thursdays. Buy a $20 upper box ticket and get a hot dog and a small Pepsi absolutely free. Get your tickets today by calling 248-25-TIGER, online at DetroitTigers.com, at any Ticketmaster outlet, or by visiting the Comerica Park box office. See Pudge Rodriguez, Carlos Guillen, and Rondell White take on the Angels this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And don't forget, this Thursday is a day game. 105 first pitch. Tickets are on sale now. Call 248-25-TIGER or online at DetroitTigers.com. Detroit Tigers baseball, we're earning our stripes.
Nightfall is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, more of your comments, questions, and opinions with your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. 1 hour until the interview that I am doing with Craig Unger. Craig Unger is the author of House of Bush, House of Saud, S-A-U-D, like in Saudi Arabia, and the incredible corrupt connection between the Saudi government and the Bush family that goes back a long, long time. This interview will knock your socks off, let me tell you. And it's played again at radiopower.org. The whole show is tomorrow, whiterosesociety.org. So if you miss it, you can always go back there. You want to tell your friends, do that as well. PeterWerby.com, PeterWerby.com. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about what probably is the Million Woman March for Women's Lives that occurred, I can say it now, for 15 seconds today in Washington, D.C. Foxhole News dropped it about 90%. That's called decimating. You know, you say, man, they were decimated. Decimated really means, if you think about the word, only leaves 10%. So they disappeared about 900,000 women that came from all across the country and apparently 60 other countries to say no to George W. Bush's far right wing the Christian conservative view that he's trying to ram down the throat of all of us. Yeah, just keep your religion off of women's bodies. It's none of our business. None of our business why women decide to have abortions or, you know, someone that's frivolous or using a birth control or. And here, this is what. No. Let me get this one. In fact, I kind of just spoke to it. Ryan from Redford wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He said, why isn't adoption pushed? Most cases of unwanted pregnancy can be compromised with adoption, even if it is hard for the mother. Hey, Ryan, it should be easier than abortion. Well, more women die in childbirth than from abortion. In other words, abortion is safer than full-term pregnancy. Those are the stats. I mean, I'm not talking about all around the world. I'm talking about in America. There's more complications from pregnancy. More women die, suffer problems, and what have you. So, and that's what I said just earlier. That's what I call the breeding sow theory of anti-abortion. Now, Garrett writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I once saw a documentary in which women in South America would have abortions by jumping out of trees. This was the accepted way of having an abortion? The point was to jump from the tree and land on your stomach, forcing the child out. It was amazing to see a woman doing this, obviously in desperation. Let's keep abortion legal and safe, to be sure. And that's the key to it all, because April wrote in earlier, and she said she doesn't really agree with abortion, but since women are going to have it, let's keep it safe. Because abortion occurs all around the world in all cultures, and there's nothing that you can do to stop it. You can make it more painful, more shameful, and that's what they're really all about. Because when you get past all this, oh, we're killing the kids and all that, and you start hammering them about how nothing that they say makes a bit of sense unless it's based on their religious theology, which is cool for them, but they have no right whatsoever to force it on the rest of us and the rest of the women. And I say, oh, it's because, you know, abortion affects men as well. they then, you know what they always wind up saying? Well, they got themselves into it. That's what they always get down to. They got themselves into it. Because, well, you know, they want them to bear the shame of the act that they committed, the sexual act that they, you know. So that's all about. At the end of it all, it's all about sex and sexual repression. So go back to the 20th century, or if you want to retain those ideas, maintain them in a respectful way to other people. Don't try to shove your ideas down the throat of other people. But that's par for the course for authoritarians, and conservatives in the main are authoritarians. All right, let's go back to our phones. We're going to line one, Jay Hudson. Thank you very much. Jay is our, will be answering your call. He's our producer here. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
How you doing, Peter? This is Roger, truck driver.
Hey, Roger.
Talked to you in a long time. Since then, I've only taken a couple more pay cuts, you know. Sort of getting used to it now.
Great, great.
Medical. I got something that's a little different, you know, but it sort of goes the same thing.
Sure.
I had a friend at 60 years old, this girl, which was in prison and a junkie and everything, says, this guy's selling dope. So the cops come in, right? They find nothing, bust apart his house, which you can't sue him for. He's got a safe with $200,000 that he bought 35 years ago. He worked for GM. His wife's worked at a grocery store. He still lives in the same $10,000 house he bought 38 years ago. Nothing fancy, but what just gets me, it's like the same thing. He's got a fight now, cannot have a jury trial. They never charge him with nothing. It says the state of Michigan versus $200,000+. But it just seems, you know, I mean, they went in like Gestapo's. It's just funny, the time he's supposed to be doing this, he's having a lung removed from cancer.
Great.
And it just sort of goes, you know, with the same essence that right now they want to be a police state, just like these abortions. And these are the same people that bitch, okay, you know, we're tired of paying welfare. You know, it's like such a double-edged sword. It just seems their main thing is to take away any rights that people have, that people fought for years to gain.
Well, it is true, and the way they're dealing with this is sort of death of a thousand cuts, because they, you know, they eke into it more and more. And a lot of it, you got to remember, is through terror. They had all these anti-abortion nuts that were shooting abortion providers, doctors that performed abortions. Catholic hospitals won't allow them. I think something like abortion is unavailable in like 80% of the nation's counties.
And, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So what in many ways been eliminated for people in a lot of rural areas, I mean, people like in North Dakota and northern Idaho and places like that. Because for one thing, how would you like to be performing your medical tasks and having to wear a bulletproof vest because one of these life-loving wackos might take a pot shot at you?
It doesn't seem too right.
It doesn't at all. Roger, thank you very much. Keep on trucking, and we'll talk again, huh?
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Sure thing. 313-298-WRIF. It's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, great talk to you, Peter.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to talk about the march this weekend, which is I'm an independent voter, which I only have been for about 2 years probably. And for the abortion issue, like for me, like I would never do it. But I'm starting to realize that when you get this right Republican, you know, kind of right-wing group in office, they really start telling you what you can and can't do. And I used to be one of those people that thought, you know, abortion's wrong, so everyone shouldn't be allowed. And I just kind of I changed a little bit on that. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the government, when did they start being allowed to regulate every piece of our lives? And when did that become acceptable? Is like regulating television or radio. I mean, it's getting ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand, like, where people, you know, where the government comes off saying that they can or they can't. Like, I mean, if most people are against censorship, most people are against, you know, the government making all these laws just, you know, to cover the most stupid things in your life. That you're like, you know, you can't smoke pot, you can't do this, you can't do that. When does it stop? When does the barrier come up for personal liberties and law?
Well, sure.
What
I mean,
that's
a good way to put it. I mean, think about the hit that some of these morning shows have taken and how they've had to alter the material. Now, no one has ever been able to show, at least to my satisfaction, that by having so-called indecent material on the radio, how anyone is harmed by it. Maybe someone's, like, insulted by it a little, or they go, oh, did you hear what he just said? Cock-a-poo-poo. On,
you're going to affect me.
What was that?
You're going to affect me in a bad way. Don't say that.
Right.
I'll just make one last comment. I'll let you go.
Well, anyway, actually, I want to ask you a question. You said you'd never have an abortion. I don't know if you do things like that, but you haven't even given your first name, which is okay. But I wonder if there's ever a possibility that you would have sexual relations with a woman that you hardly knew, maybe just met at a party, and everything kind of had its own momentum. And about a month later, this woman says to you, I got bad news for you. I'm pregnant.
Well, for me, I mean, I'm one of those people that's waiting until I get married to have intercourse.
Okay. Well, that settles it then.
Well, can I just say one thing real quick?
Sure.
I just think it's kind of hypocritical that all the things George Bush is against now is all the things he loved to indulge himself in while he was in the National Guard.
Well,
how's it going, Pete?
Yeah, okay, you're right. We think about what a party animal George W. Bush was, the rumors, the charges of cocaine use, and, you know, just what a party dog he was. And, of course, now that he's found religion, he wants to enforce it on all the rest of us. All right, let's continue onward. Hi, it's WRF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how are you?
Doing good.
All right. I just want to say that it's not fair to call all the people that are pro-choice compulsory pregnancy people. Just how it would be not fair to call all of our pro-life.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. In other words, you're saying it's not fair to call the people that are opposed to abortion. Let's get some neutral phrases in here. The compulsory pregnancy.
All right, that would be something. If you would call the people that are pro-choice or for abortion baby killers, you know, that to me sounds like it would be the same thing.
Well, I guess I don't see it's quite the same, but let me tell you why I use that. Because they've attempted through phraseology from adopting these words solely that they have the ethical high ground, that they are pro-life. So what does it mean if you oppose them? You are anti-life by that definition. And similarly, the people that support the right of a woman to have an abortion call themselves pro-choice, and that has a lot of public relations qualities to it as well, even though it's more accurate. It's much more accurate than the pro-life people. Because the pro, you say, I'm pro-life because I want to protect the babies that the women are carrying. Well, strictly speaking, using precise terminology, it's not a baby at all. It's not a kid. It's not a child. It's a fetus, a solely dependent part of the woman that in no society, and certainly not in our society, an entity that is considered to have the full rights of a human being. So the pro-choice is accurate in the sense that that a woman wants choice whether does she want to carry the baby or not. But I mean, it has a public relations quality to it, because the people that thought that up know that American people want to have a choice in everything and don't want to have stuff shoved down their throat.
It doesn't make it sound fair or right. So I'm sure some of those people really care. All right, I'm against abortion myself. All right, but if you want to have one, I'm not going to have one, and I'm not going to help you. If you want to have one, you're free to do what you want. And you make it sound like those people that are pro-life are just in it to control what you do, and not that they care about you, and they think maybe having an abortion will be wrong.
Well, you know what? I know actually a number of very liberal, progressive, peace and social justice activists that are Catholics, that base their desire for peace, that oppose George Bush on every issue, that also because of their faith are anti-abortion. And they do, they're not very vocal about it, and they have what they call, the seamless garment. So they're against war, they're against capital punishment, and they're against abortion. But they don't want the political state to act out their concerns about abortion. They want the political state to back off of killing people. But when it comes to abortion, what they try to involve themselves in is creating a world in which not very many women want to have abortions. The majority of abortions are because of economic reasons.
I disagree. I don't believe that it will be economic reasons for people have abortions.
Why do you think? What do you think it is?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why someone would have an abortion. I'm a guy. You know, I'm not a woman. Obviously, I'm never going to have an abortion. You know, and it seems unnatural for someone to want to do something like that. And it seems kind of wrong.
Wait. Now let's go back. As I was saying, that and if somebody knows something different, that since the emergence of the species in organized society, that women knew how to induce abortions and did so even in primitive groups and continue to do so where these where civilization hasn't eaten up all these people. In Catholic-dominated countries throughout Latin America, and in Ireland and in other Catholic countries like Italy, women have abortions all the time. Women have abortions, always have, and always will. What it really depends on is what circumstances, what medical circumstances, what kind of legal protections. So to make abortion illegal, I'm not saying you were saying it was, simply condemns more women to having awful medical care, death, disfigurement, sterility, and shame. So who would want to do that other than the people that are punitive by nature?
I would not want to have someone go through that, okay? Now, you keep bringing up Catholics. I'm a Catholic myself, and I completely disagree with abortion, but I'm not going to tell you to have one or not to have one. I'm not going to tell someone what to do. But when you say that the people that are pro-life and you call them compulsory pregnancy people or whatever,
yeah,
you make it sound like they're doing it for reasons. I'm sure there's some people that are politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you there's a lot of people that really care and they think it's wrong and they think that maybe those women are being forced into having an abortion, or they think that it's okay to have an abortion because people are saying it is okay.
Now, I mean, who knows? I don't think there's any way to tell. And as I said, I don't think it's any of our business. Up to the woman, her doctor, and whoever else is important in the decision-making. Not this political state, not the church. Thank you. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, I would like to comment on a couple of situations that I've heard you talking about. The first is Iraq. The World Trade Center was hit by two planes, and after that, the United States population screamed for retaliation. We wanted to take back what we thought we lost.
Mm-hmm.
The towers were hit. Now that people are dying, our U.S. soldiers are dying over in Iraq, people are saying that it's wrong, and the amount of money that it's going to cost is all wrong. And weren't those people the same ones that wanted something to happen after the World Trade Center were hit?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell who's who. You know, I mean, we got to remember, we as American people get whipped. Our passions and our even just our views of things get whipped around by the media and by politicians trying to create an effect. So it's one thing one day, it's another thing the next day. And I
understand that.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I've heard your show a couple of times, and just hearing the people speak about how we shouldn't be over in Iraq. Well, we're retaliating to what the Al-Qaeda did.
Wait a minute, what does Iraq have to do with September 11th?
Well, it's been thrown around that Saddam had helped the Al-Qaeda.
Well, except they didn't, and there's no reason even to suspect that he did. The people that wanted to connect him up with it, particularly people like Dick Cheney, the vice president, had no capacity to do it because there absolutely was no connection whatsoever. Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, hated Saddam Hussein. We thought he was apostate because he was a secular ruler. So there was no love lost, and he was like Osama wants to overthrow the Saudi government. He also wants to overthrow You know, the he wanted to overthrow Saddam Hussein. He supported Hamas and Islamic Jihad among the Palestinians, but hated Yasser Arafat, who was a secular leader. But forgetting all of that, there's absolutely there was no connection whatsoever between September 11th and Saddam Hussein. Bush and them kind of threw that into the mix, but even George W. Bush has said there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and September 11th. And there's unless you can bring some evidence to me, or someone who says that there was, or some study, or some whatever, that you got to give it up. All right, thank you. No answer. Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, people have this almost like an article of faith. Saddam Hussein was involved in September 11th. How do you know? Well, let me ask the question again. Why do you think that? Yeah, there's this big silence because they believe it, but they don't know why they believe it. Well, why do you think you have beliefs that you have no rational basis for? I mean, everything I believe, I can say, well, I believe this because I have this information. And I've read about this. I have, I've seen stuff on it. Well, maybe that's too obscure. When I say I've seen stuff on it, it means I've read stuff on the internet, I've read books, I've read newspaper accounts, whatever. But there has never been the slightest suspicion. Remember that with Cheney right after, and Rumsfeld started saying, we got to connect it up with Iraq. We got to connect it up with Iraq. Because this is part of their long-range strategy to create this imperial outpost for the United States. Doesn't matter how many Iraqis are killed, doesn't matter how many Americans are killed. They've got big plans. Guys like them never get in the blood. They all scammed out of the war in Iraq, in Vietnam. All of them. They're all chicken hawks. They love war as long as they don't have to fight them. Because they're rich. They're powerful. They're wealthy. They're, you know, in the case of Bush, who was able to scam his way into the National Guard and go AWOL and all that. Nothing ever happened. Very typical. In fact, well, actually, it wasn't typical. Most of them were able to completely get out of the draft, even though they supported the war. I mean, mostly it was the white working class and minorities that fought, just like now. Same thing was true in Vietnam. Although there was a draft. I mean, you had some John Kerry's, comes from a wealthy family, winds up volunteering, or was it John Tillman? I'm forgetting already. That just got killed in Afghanistan. That volunteered, but those are exceptions that prove the rule. Actually, so again, myths. Every society has myths, but some of them are really harmful. And this one is extraordinarily harmful because it does not allow us to look clearly what's going on. I don't know how many times tonight I've already said, I'll say it one more time and one more time only. George W. Bush said Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with September 11th when finally confronted with it. I mean, he doesn't think on his feet. I don't think he thinks, sitting down either. But he was kind of confronted, and knowing that there was no connection, he actually said it. I mean, he usually lies, but he didn't this time. He told the truth. And if you if you're holding this belief, you're believing in something really dumb. That's all I can say about it. 313-298-WRIF. And here's the next caller. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? No? All right. Should I put it on hold, or you want to do that? Okay. All right, we'll go to another line. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. What am I doing? Something wrong? Maybe they're just dropping like flies, Jay. Although I don't want to call our listeners flies. So there's a couple open lines. 313-298-WRIF. All right, it's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good. Thanks for joining us.
I wonder how many pro-life people were protesting the great abortion of democracy that occurred 3 years ago when Bush ascended to the high office.
Well, yeah, not too many, I would think.
I got a friend of mine. She's a recovering alcoholic. We've come up with a test. There should be a substance abuse test for presidential candidates.
Okay.
Alcoholics and cokeheads? No, they're erratic.
I mean, even when they're in recovery?
Yep. Well, he's a dry drunk anyway.
He is. He is indeed.
he's been taking his whole white knuckle approach into Iraq and getting everybody shot up over there. Maybe we need an ex-reformed pothead.
I don't know. Are potheads ever reformed? All the potheads I know are still smoking.
That's true. That's true.
Not me. Not me.
And we're also glad to see the comic strips taking up the war in Iraq.
Really? Like which ones?
Doonesbury.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mr. BD had his leg blown off.
Yeah, that's pretty strange stuff.
Yeah. Some of them go straight through to anger.
Yeah.
And then Get Fuzzy. Get Fuzzy's been the main character in there. His cousin's leg got shot off in Iraq, and he was forced to go meet the returning wounded veteran at 2 a.m. at Andrews Air Force Base.
Wow.
So hopefully they'll use that forum to expose.
Well, this is all out there on so many different forums. All the information, all the exposés, it permeates cultural stuff. I mean, there's starting this whole Bands Against Bush, and actually, I should go to my website, what is it? Rock Against Bush as well. The late night comedians, the talk show host, Letterman, Leno, and all those people make nonstop jokes about Bush. And he still has like 50% approval rating. Who the hell is in that 50%?
I don't know, but they're scary.
They are. Well, let me tell you one thing. A third of the people would support Mussolini if he was in power here. So one of the things that the conservatives, the far right, has is third of the, what I call the third of the population you can fool all the time, from Lincoln's dictum. They only have to get like 18%, and we have to get 51%. And they've only got 18%. They only get 18%, and then they have a majority.
This is true.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us. Let's see. Ed writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Ed from Warren, I'm a high school sophomore, so your knowledge greatly outweighs mine. Well, maybe. Yeah, I'm being modest. Anyway, I want to get an answer from someone that isn't going to give me a polished-up right-wing propaganda answer. No, I should pre-read these. How is this country going to stabilize the Iraq economy? We can't take care of our own economy, let alone the economy of another nation's. The new Iraqi dinar is virtually worthless. People around the world buy up the currency as if it were candy. People buy it now as if they were going to get a huge return down the road. We need international help in Iraq, militarily and financially. Iraq needs to be its own sovereign nation, but the road we are going down is the wrong one. Well, I don't think the U.S., I mean, think about who's we here, Ed? We need international help. George Bush is ill-fated needless illegal invasion of Iraq is not going to get any help. I mean, as it stands now, there's this puppet government. I mean, it's a colonial regime appointed by the conquering legions, okay? And the people are starting to revolt. What's going on is a mass revolt. Bush has managed to do something that was never accomplished in hundreds and hundreds of years. He has united the Sunnis and the Shiites in Iraq. This has never happened before. The hatred of the Iraqi people for Americans is increasing every single day. And as we're talking, they're preparing for invasions of Najaf and Fallujah. And once again, Bush has put us, but mainly the Iraqi people and our soldiers over there, into a position of being damned if they do and damned if they don't. Because as it is, the United States has had the forces there has had to back down on any number of occasions. If they go into these cities and have to do, for instance, what Israel does in the West Bank and Gaza, what happens to the illusion that we're there for the benefit of the Iraqi people? Now, in terms of how is the United States going to stabilize the Iraqi economy? Well, they're intending to loot it. Paul Bremer, who is the dictator, essentially, the colonial dictator of Iraq, and how did he get to this position? By force. by force of arms. He has declared, pardon me, that contrary to the Iraqi constitution, that firms now, that I'm sorry, industries now, can be owned by foreign firms that can take out 100% of the profits. Now you start understanding one of the many reasons that the United States made up all these lies to invade Iraq. Now let me just go through that again. Iraq has in its constitution that foreign companies could only either take nothing or probably a small percentage. It was to, a small percentage. It was to protect the nationalized oil industry. So if the invasion was in large part to control oil, if that constitution stood, well, then this would have all been for naught. Bush's oil buddies wouldn't have been able to reap the rewards. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to anyways. I mean, this is really has all the markings of a total, well, I mean, it's been a disaster anyways, and it's going to wind up soon to be a total disaster. I just hope it doesn't turn out to also be a total massacre as well. So now, Bremer, the dictator of Iraq, declares you're going to be a democracy because we're going to keep all the troops here, and also that our companies, that we invaded your country, and now our countries can come in, take the oil wells, and take all the profits out and send it back to our stockholders. Isn't that a racket? Isn't that what they used to just call a racket, sort of the mafia and all of that? Except in the meantime, thousands of people are getting are dying. And that's you know, that's the bumper sticker. Bush lied, people died. There's another one's Bush lied, thousands died. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, this sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
Whoa, this weather's freezing. Wow, looks like you've been in here for a long time, Rick.
Yeah, every time I check it, it shrinks more and more.
You're kidding. It's still shrinking.
Yeah, I kind of wish it would drop all the way down to nothing, but, you know, that's just crazy. It's unrealistic.
Hey, I know it's a personal question, but, you know, you mind if I see it?
You really want to see it?
Well, I'm kind of curious.
Okay, yeah, well, it's right over here. Just take a peek.
Cool. Wow, that did shrink. There's almost nothing left. Hey, but aren't you worried that it's going to, you know, become huge again?
No, CompleteMortgageSearch.com locked this payment for me. Then even after they lock your rate, the search isn't over. My payment even shrank since my first quote, and I don't need to move my closing date back.
I doubt they could shrink mine that much. My credit's not very good.
Are you kidding? CompleteMortgageSearch.com shops all kinds of lenders, so good credit or bad, they'll get the best deal for you. Don't close a deal without a free second opinion from CompleteMortgageSearch.com to see if they can shrink that rate for you.
Man, what I wouldn't give to make mine smaller.
Everyone says they have the lowest rates. Let CompleteMortgageSearch.com tell you the truth. CompleteMortgageSearch.com. They do the work. You get the money.
Depression is a disabling condition that will affect one in five people sometime during their life. There are many warning signs of depression that often go unnoticed. Sleeping and eating patterns may change. A simple activity may seem impossible. Decision-making becomes difficult. Depression leaves you feeling hopeless and worthless. You feel tired and lack motivation to get out and do the things you used to enjoy. Life becomes discouraging and nothing feels satisfying. And this may leave you feeling guilty. It's important to understand that depression is a medical condition, not a personality flaw or weakness. Dr. Robert Bielski and the Institute for Health Studies are conducting research on an investigational medication for depression. If you are selected to participate, all research-related care and study medication is provided at no cost by our team of doctors, nurses, and research staff. Call the Institute for Health Studies toll-free at 1-877-908-CARE. That's 1-877-908-CARE.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's spring 2004 semester. Register on the web at www.oaklandcc.edu or visit any of OCC's five convenient campuses to register for your choice of classes in literally hundreds of subjects. Classes like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you're a four-year university student and want to get some classes out of the way before you go back in the fall, or if you just want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Oakland Community College at www.oaklandcc.edu. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin May 10th. You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to a doctor who's developed a point system based on lifestyle and other factors to predict your lifespan.
We know that both men and women, when they're married, they have a tendency to live longer. They get a plus 3 points.
Oh, I've heard
that. More likely to exercise, more likely to go out, more likely to eat a well-balanced meal.
Yeah, Mike just wants his points for being married, but he does none of the things that married people do that make them live longer. He still thinks he's going to take the 3 years.
Believe me. Yeah, being married is the only plus in my categories. Believe me. It's nice. This is in a sea of minus.
But you can't take the 3 years when you do none of the things that married people get the points for.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Wow, you're shouting at me.
Because I'm not getting you the full name of this book. And it's this incredible story of corruption and the internal connections in both financially and politically of the Bush family and the Royal Saud family. S-A-U-D, Saud. I'm not saying that well. Let me see here. I'm going to give you the whole name of the book here. Here. The House of Bush, House of Saud, the secret relationship between the world's two most powerful dynasties. Dynasties, folks. We're being ruled by a dynasty. And who do they got in the wings in case Fredo loses? It's Jeb. Whew. All right, let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey, what's going on, man? I'm here to badmouth the military.
Why? How come?
They threw me out, man, because of my criminal record.
They threw you out? I mean, were you in?
I was in. I was sworn in, and I was supposed to leave February 2nd. And what happened was I was going to go infantry, and I was hoping to make a ranger slot, which I don't know why. That was kind of a crazy idea from my perspective because I really didn't know what the whole war was about, and I'm glad you're publicly coming out with this whole it has nothing to do with the Afghanistan thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't talk about that sort of thing. But my whole deal was it was just an open intoxicant ticket, and all the courts, they said that they didn't hear about it and they didn't have my name, but the FBI did. So when my fingerprints came up laser scan, I got thrown out.
And so, I mean, I thought if you have a record, you can't get in the Army?
If you have a Category 4, it's alcohol-related. It's not drug-related, but it's high enough drug-related that it would be a bad enough charge.
Huh.
But the whole point was I was going in for college money, and I was jobless at the time, and it was like the thing to do. And my whole life has changed because I just got accepted into Eastern and turned my life around.
So now you're
really a big dropout.
So what, you are going to Eastern now, or you're not?
Yeah. I'm actually in for the spring and the summer classes.
Well, that's good. It's probably a better place to be than sitting outside of Fallujah when it's 95 degrees and these sand fleas are biting you. And there are people that, you know, even following that all, these are these old cities that have these labyrinthine alleyways that I was thinking probably what I would do if I was a rebel and a modern military force was going to invade. I'd have all those small alleys just mined with bombs. And as soon as more than 10 soldiers from our side got there, they'd...
Well, I processed back in December, and back then you didn't hear on the news that there were 10 soldiers dying a day or so on. You know, there wasn't so many deaths now, and pretty soon it'll just turn into another Vietnam. Nobody over there is going to love you. Nobody over here is going to love you, and nobody's going to care about you except you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think eventually when it gets down to it in any war, what you're fighting for is to keep yourself and your buddies alive.
Yeah, we haven't fought for our own country since the Civil War, matter of fact. So I feel bad about this country. I can't believe I grew up in a country like this, matter of fact, that a president was appointed by other people who were appointed. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
The voting has no power whatsoever here.
Well, I guess if you look at the 2000 election, there's not much of a different conclusion you could come to. I'm interested. You know, here, let me. Actually, I never brought this up. I don't know if I still have it even. Oh, yeah. Some people think that that they've got Osama bin Laden in a box, right? And they're just gonna pop him out. They're gonna.
Okay. How do we know if Osama bin Laden's a real person?
Well, I think.
How do we know that those jets weren't just like mechanically controlled to fly into those towers?
Well, I think that we probably have some good ideas about it, but I think it's going to be curious to see what kind of surprises occur between now and the election, because I mean, something like 4 out of 5 Americans think that that there's going to be another terrorist attack, and they ask Bush, and he said, "Well, this is a big country; it's hard to defend." Yeah, well, he didn't do very well on September 11th. All right, thanks a lot. Best of luck in your, you know, in what's happening to you. Maybe it'll work out for the best. 313-298-WRIF. Do I have my next caller here? I do. Thank you. Hi, you're on the air. Hi, hi.
Hey, what's up? Big guy Dave from Taylor, man.
How's hi, Dave.
Hey, yeah. Big fan from way back, man.
No, thanks.
Big fan. Hey, listen, I'm just wondering, from your perspective, what would you have done on that day?
What day is that?
Well, you know, I mean, would you retaliate against anybody, or you just kind of sat back and, you know, analyze the situation?
Oh, you mean after September 11th?
Well, I'm just saying, but you know, everybody's always attacking Bush for going to Iraq.
Yeah.
What would you, would we just say, would have been better to just sit back and just try to figure out our next attack, or just...
Well, wait a minute. That's what they...
Retaliated against anybody?
That's what they did. We had a criminal gang of right-wing religious fanatics that carried out this murderous assault on us on September 11th. All the signs were there, and if Bush would have been up to the job, at least we would have had a chance to have stopped that. I mean, who knows? People say, it never couldn't be stopped. Well, once we knew that there were that Al-Qaeda was in the country, had operating cells, and, you know, Bush got all this information, and also told that the possibility of airplanes as a could be used to attack public buildings and symbols of America. Yeah, I remember he had been at this conference in Italy, in Genoa, called the G7 meeting, and they were so worried about planes being hijacked and flown into the building that Bush slept offshore in a Navy ship. Anyway, so this crime occurs. And what should have been done immediately was to, gotten international support, gone into where these bases were in Afghanistan, and destroyed them. But there was also long-range plans to not only destroy Al-Qaeda, because Bush, I mean, in broad terms, they knew another attack was coming. I mean, they had been occurring all along. And the idea was to invade and overthrow the Afghan Afghan government of the Taliban. They tried to cut all these oil deals with them. Bush gave $43 million of our money, our tax dollars, to the Taliban in April of 2001, trying to buy them off to let them put this oil pipeline through the joint. Had the Taliban over here and, you know, talking to his oil buddies in Texas. Now, all of a sudden, you know, things are going along. August, beginning in, I forgot what it was, May 2003, this stuff about Enron comes up. And we understand that Bush's corrupt buddies are running the American energy policy. Remember, there was a secret meeting that Cheney still is trying to keep secret. That they've had their people in different echelons of the Bush regime. And it looks like it's getting really hot for Bush. His numbers, his poll numbers are beginning to plummet. And that's when they play the Iraq card. That's when they make up this whole story that Saddam Hussein threatens not only the region, but also us directly here in the United States. This is a pure and total fabrication, a lie of Hitlerian proportions. Hitlerian in the sense that it's used to justify aggression against another country. Because there's no basis for invading Iraq whatsoever. Had nothing to do with September 11th whatsoever. Had no weapons of mass destruction. Represented no threat to anyone. And if in terms of its internal repressive qualities, it had the same repressive qualities when Bush's father and Reagan were supporting it. So that's my thought on it. What's yours?
Well, you know, I mean, after a situation like that, which is grievous to everybody. I mean, that was a sad state in America.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Do you point your stick in any direction?
Well, wait a minute, but they did. They went in and invaded Afghanistan. That's where it came from, although they probably should have invaded Saudi Arabia, where the funding came from, and 15 of the 19 people do. But as you'll learn in a few minutes, is the Bush family and the Saudi royal family, including people that were involved in funding terrorism, are all hooked in together. So what does Iraq have to do with September 11th? I don't understand this.
Well, you know, I mean, as far as it goes along, we all come to realize that, you know, possibly they didn't have a direct tie.
Wait a minute. Well, it's not a possibly they didn't. There's no evidence whatsoever to suggest that they did.
Okay, but if they didn't, after the attacks, would you point your stick in any direction, or would you retaliate against anybody, or would you just wait for something?
I don't know what your question is.
My question is, we're attacking Iraq. People are dying every day.
Yeah, right.
Okay, if we didn't attack Iraq,
right,
what would have been the next best scenario to do?
Well, how about trying to make some friends around the world instead of being a recruitment for more al-Qaeda, and maybe even worse than directly recruiting people to a disciplined organization, of creating the situation where tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people hate the United States and are just longing for something awful to happen to us. So everything that Bush has done has been counterproductive. Because we're wasting, what, $5 billion a month on this fool's errand, this magnificent lie that Bush floated, and instead of using perhaps 10% of that to track down actual criminal perpetrators of these acts that threaten us all. So he's created more terrorists. He's wound up getting hundreds and hundreds of Americans killed over there. He's gotten thousands of Americans wounded. So this has not worked out, has it?
No.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Thanks, Dave. Hi. It's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. This is Paul from Plymouth.
Hi, Paul.
I wanted to, you know, the abortion issue came up on the show.
Yeah.
I wanted to offer a solution to this whole issue.
Sure.
You know. First of all, it's sad that we got to discuss this in the media. I look at abortion as like heart surgery or cataracts or, you know, a surgery in a hospital, where it's private, it's your personal business. No one needs to know about it.
Okay.
But I think where it all went wrong, and we could even fix this, is when it turned into a business, this abortion, with clinics, and we have them in our cities around us, where it's just a business of just abortions. So I think maybe if we continue to allow it, which is fine, I support freedom for everyone, well, we could do it in a different light. Let's put this in a hospital setting where you're just another person walking in the door to the hospital, where there are many procedures going on all day long, and instead of having this clinic that seems to be a magnet for trouble, you know, a woman still has a procedure. It'll be a freedom, but it'll just blend into a hospital instead of just being...
Well, I agree with you completely, but you know what happened, of course, is that hospitals, for any number of reasons, began to refuse to do it. The reason that clinics began was because there were no providers.
Well, I think that's discriminating, isn't it?
I mean, you would think that that the hospitals ought to be required to carry out all legal procedures. What if some hospital, I can't even think of the name, what's that hospital up on Woodward and 13 Mile. Beaumont. Beaumont.
Oh, right.
What did Beaumont say? Well, appendectomy.
Right. We're not doing heart surgery.
Yeah, we're not doing heart surgery.
Right.
Well, on one level, you might say, well, they got the right to do it. But on the other, this is purely political, religious discrimination. So
this could totally go away. Could I mention something else about
sure,
the war? Who was the football player who just passed away?
Was it, now I'm forgetting his name again, I think I said it right, John Tillman, was it?
Tillman. You know, that's quite a decision he made not to play football.
Yeah.
I got to admit, of all the stories I've heard on the media, that's the most patriotic story I've heard, where someone would give up such a career. I don't know too many people who would do that. So we got to really, you know, I think, pat this family on the back for, you know, their loss.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks.
appreciate it. Let's see. Ron is writing it. Oh, yeah. He's the guy that sent me this. I'm losing it, too. If you go to my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com, there is a kind of, Not a poll. How do you do it when you bet? Why can't I think of this? A pool. That's what it is. You bet when something, you know, something's going to happen. Well, you can bet when Bush is going to pop Saddam or Osama bin Laden out of the box. And so these are these folks that have sort of a little pool. I don't know, I remember whether you win anything or not. I ought to check on my own site here. All right, here you go. Oh, yeah, people are beginning to vote. You can vote, will gasoline prices be lower just in time for Election Day? You get to vote yes or no. And what happened? Actually, the poll was there about, oh, that's the poll, right. But then also, it's just in the nick of time. Do you believe that Bush will pop Osama bin Laden out of the box just in time for the election? If so, enter our contest. That would have been an easier word. And give your guess on the exact date. Enter by checking here. And I don't know what you win. What the hell do you win? And you get, so you put your email address and month they produce Osama bin Laden, day they produce Osama bin Laden, and then you submit it. I haven't done it yet. All right, let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I'm discovering your show for the first time. I really like it.
Well, thank you so much. How'd you happen to find it?
Actually, I was driving home and just doing the random channel search.
Oh, great. Great. Welcome.
Pleasant surprise.
What's on your mind?
This abortion thing, you know? I get really worried about people on a soapbox 9 times out of 10 anyway. But, you know, we look at our government and their past success with regulating things they think are immoral, and I'm not sure that I want my uterus to be one of those.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they did such a good job with alcohol and with pot regulation, with everything else. I'm not digging it, you know?
I used to have a producer, Jalene Jordan, actually on a national show I did. She was my co-host. And she used to yell into the microphone, get your laws off my uterus.
Yeah. I heard it.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, and I'm newly graduated from college in the education field, and I, you know, I've been in inner city schools, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm looking at the lives of children that were forced upon their parents, and I would prefer, you know, of course, the best case scenario is that every adult in the world makes an educated decision and is responsible about the outcomes of that, but that's not going to happen. We're going to get a black market. Things are going to become unsafe, just like they did the first time around, and it's like, I find it very hard to follow a president who uses the word freedom so conveniently for other people across the world, but not for me as a citizen.
Well,
I have to think, you know, he keeps saying freedom for Iraqis, which we have established is not happening. But also, you know, what about, you know, my right to lead my life in the way in which I feel is correct and upright, you know?
You object to male legislators telling you what you can do with your reproductive rights and then have male police arresting you?
Oh, you mean, it's crazy. You would think that most women in America have a brain that we could actually think for ourselves and make educated decisions about our own lives. I knew it's a new concept, especially for our president. But.
Well, I think most women support a woman's right to choose, even women who don't like the idea of abortion. And, yeah, I mean, first you have to set a political, social, financial context where all babies are wanted. And then the second thing you have to do is have a full medical care system that would allow and provide contraception to everyone. Because when you get down to these punitive, sexually repressive conservatives, essentially what they want, they don't want people to have sex. And if you have sex, they want it to wind up in babies. And even the people whose religion says that, the vast majority of them don't follow that or believe that. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of Catholics. I don't think too many of them have 10 kids, although I have known Catholic families with 10 kids.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important. I mean, it's good for religious people that have devoted their life to living into a certain moral code because, you know, it's not easy. But at the same time, it's your moral code, not everybody's moral code. And you would think that in a country where we boast freedom so openly that we would allow, you know, women to say, maybe that's not for me. And I would love to say, you know, as a Catholic and just as a person, I would never do anything like that, but I'm at least smart enough to know that I never know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
I wish that people would troubleshoot for stuff like that if they're going to make it. If they're going to take the choice out of my hand, then they better be able to, they better be willing to live my life. That's the way that I feel about it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
Appreciate it. All right. Always glad to have new listeners. Jay, do we have another call? On line number two. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing well.
I appreciate the show.
Thanks.
I just had a couple comments and a website I'd like to suggest.
Sure.
First of all, my sister's been in Iraq since May of last year.
Wow.
So the scenario has become somewhat of an obsession for me, and I spent a lot of time online. And I just had a couple comments here. First of all, there's been ongoing colonial interference in what Bush refers to as the Greater Middle East for, you know, at least the last century.
Yeah, people tend to forget that.
One empire after another, right? And fact is, it's been festering all that time. And it's a stated goal of Islamic fundamentalists to establish a global Islamic state. And they're playing a long-term game. You know, I mean, if this was a chess game, you know, they're thinking plenty moves ahead. And then you've got Bush, who I you know, read about an interview he did recently where he was asked, you know, what he felt, how history would view, you know, his actions. And his reply was, you know, well, history, he says, we won't know. We'll all be dead.
Yeah, he's a real, real bright guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not really thinking ahead on this. And unfortunately, the people that are, you know, out to get us, in a sense, are, and they're, you know, like totally motivated after all this year time, you know, all these years of repression over there, and they really know what's going on, you know, over here, you know, whereas our populace doesn't, with the corruption in our government.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's been colonial domination and meddling in that area for the over 100 years. And in many ways, this is just the, you know, another result of it. I mean, somehow it does not seem odd to anyone that people from another country are inserting themselves militarily and politically and economically in another region, because that's what Western colonialism and imperialism was all about. And the looting of other sectors of the world for the benefit of people in the home country, whether it's England or the United States, it just seems to be par for the course. And they put up a lot of, you know, faldera about, you know, liberty and democracy, but mostly that's just, you know, something to salve the consciences of the, you know, the people at home. And there's been revolt after revolt in that region. What we're facing now, our troops, is essentially what happened after World War I to the British, who dominated that colonially when that was Mesopotamia. And it was the same forces, the Shiites and the Sunnis, against the British colonial troops, and the British colonial troops suppressing that particular Iraqi revolt back in the early 1920s, lost thousands and thousands of British soldiers and killed tens of thousands of Iraqis. And talk about history repeating itself.
And ironically enough, I believe that was the period when Winston Churchill ordered chemicals to be sprayed on the Iraqi people.
Yeah, he that's right. He ordered poison gas, and it was used against Iraqi tribesmen on horseback.
Yeah. So it's funny that that's the catch line. You know, he used chemical weapons on his own people. That's, mm-hmm. that's what makes him such a insane madman. And here you have Winston Churchill back in the 20s or 30s there.
Yeah, well, I heard somebody say that George Bush has gassed his own people in that sense, that gassed means, you know...
Yeah, what is that, Clean Skies Act, or...
No.
Clear Skies Act?
I didn't mean it like that, even. I meant, just, you say you gas somebody, you know, you're just putting one over on them. Hey, I gotta go. I gotta end this portion of the show.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, were you gonna suggest, was it you who was gonna suggest a website?
Yes, I would love to get this in there. This provides a little historical context to the situation.
What is it?
I don't have the exact wording, but it's Third World Traveler.
Oh, yeah, excellent. That's it. It's thirdworldtraveler.com.
Yeah, and they have excerpts from Howard Zinn's People's History.
Oh, yeah.
And also from Greg Palast's Vestermacher you can buy.
I don't know if you've been to my website. Have you ever seen that?
You know, I'm going to check it out tomorrow, and I'm going to put a link on mine.
All right. My last name is spelled W-E-R-B-E, so it's
right.
PeterWerbe.com. And there's a couple of blogs, you know, web journals from people that are in Fallujah that are absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I just, what's that, the New Standard? Is that the name of that one publication?
I don't know.
I believe if you go to ZNet, they've been running posts from there. There's two journalists that were going in and out of Fallujah and whatnot. That might be the ones you're talking about.
Could be. All right. Thank you so much.
Have a great night.
You too. All right. Stay tuned. They have an extraordinary interview with the author of The House of Bush, House of Saud. By the way, that's going up the bestseller charts. All right, right back with that.
Okay, so now my friend Barry wants to buy a motorcycle, a really big motorcycle, but he's a working guy, trying like me to pinch his pennies. Then all our friends told Barry, buy a bike at Motown, buy a bike at Motown. So Barry, who stays home nights pinching his pennies, thinks he can get the better deal if he shops the competition. Those other dealers showed him what he could get with his pennies. And then his head explodes. Then I take my friend Barry to Motown, Harley Davidson, and Taylor. They tell him, big youth police buy, save today. And he says, no way. And they say, save today. And he says, no way. And they say, save today. And Larry says, okay. And now we are riding our Harleys, and Barry has his macho, macho motorcycle and didn't have to part with all his pennies. The end.
For sales, specials, events, or just to look at cool pictures, log on to MotownHarley.com. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks stick a guy on the real motorcycle. Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
Wild Woody's and 101 WRIF are throwing one outrageous bash that you don't want to miss.
Need proof?
We've got the proof.
Hard buddies.
Hard rock.
Hard liquor.
This ain't just any party.
This is an event people in the Motor City will be talking about for years.
Join the Doc of Rock, Doug Bodell, and 101 WRIF this Wednesday night at Wild Woody's in Roseville for a 100-proof party. An absolutely over-the-top night filled with strobe light fog machines and an insane atmosphere you won't find anyplace else.
Score some sweet 100-proof goodies from Wild Woody's in the Rift. Meet the red-hot 100-proof girls in person as they compete in the sexiest cage dancer competition to win cash and prizes.
All right, gentlemen, free your mind.
From the ceiling to the dance floor, Wild Woody's is bursting at the seams with the most outrageous people and the hottest beats. Plus, register for a chance to win a night on the town. One lucky winner will be living large, flying off to L.A. to party at the Playboy Mansion. You must be 21 or older to win.
Wednesday night is also ladies' night. That means great drink specials. Plus, ladies 18 and over pay no cover whatsoever. Don't miss out on the 100-proof insanity with the Riff's Doug Podell. This Wednesday night, only at Wild Woody's on Gratiot in downtown Roseville. For more info, call 586-294-5331.
Sponsored in part by Priscilla's and Rosedale and Agency.
Good morning. This is Ray Vinson of American Equity Mortgage. If you're hearing our message at this time, it's probably because you're at work, driving around, or can't sleep. If you can't sleep, I hope it's not because of money problems, but if it is a money problem, American Equity Mortgage can help. You're not alone. The average household has a credit card debt of $6,000 or more and paying a fortune in interest. You see, if you're a homeowner, you can use the equity in your home to consolidate all your bills and have only one payment. Think about that, just one new low monthly payment. Your equity can be used to pay off your auto loans, credit cards, and get a new low fixed rate on your mortgage. You will be saving hundreds of dollars each month. American Equity Mortgage specializes in homeowners with less than perfect credit. We have helped thousands of people just like you get back on track. You can call our office right now, and a loan specialist will call you first thing in the morning. That's American Equity Mortgage. Call toll-free 888-71-LOAN-1, 888-71-LOAN, then the number one.
You've waited long enough, sitting at your desk planning your approach. You know things would be so hot, so fast, so rock and roll, so much better than it is now. You just need that one thing and your life would be complete. You know you're not happy. Stop sitting there and make your move. Spence Howard School of Broadcast Arts is exactly the next move you need to make to turn those dreams into reality. Hi, this is Screaming Scott Randall from The Rift, and I've got the greatest job in the world because I do Spence's call. Before radio, I was right where you are now. Fast food, telemarketing, data entry. All I needed was a little courage to make the move that would change my life for good. If a spring fling is all you can handle now, no worries, my friend. Call Specs Howard at 248-358-9000 by April 30th to set up a date. Take a tour of the school and check things out. There's zero commitment. Specs doesn't need to send you flowers or candy in the morning. This is your life. Do you really want to spend another unfulfilling year handing out tacos, sweeping the floor, or getting some dude a cup of coffee? No! Don't wait. Spring classes are forming now. And, of course, morning, afternoon, and evening options are available. Call 248-358-9000 today. That's 248-358-9000 for the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield. This is where you start. It's where I start.
Remember your first kiss?
What?
But remember the look on your friend's face when you told them? Remember your first car?
What a clunker!
But remember all the fun places you went in that clunker?
Uh-huh.
Remember your first hangover?
Oh, my God.
Remember getting there?
Oh,
Well, it's time for another first. You're buying your first home. Now you need to get a mortgage.
No.
But who should you call? There are so many mortgage companies out there. Who can you trust? This is a big decision, and you don't want to make a mistake.
We're Arlington Mortgage. We understand and promise to make your first home buying experience a pleasant one. We realize this is one of the most important decisions you'll ever make. At Arlington Mortgage, we'll take the time to learn as much as we can about your needs and match you with the mortgage that's right for you. Call Arlington Mortgage today at 866-525-2600. Let us do all the work. We want to make this a memorable experience.
That's Arlington Mortgage. Call them today at 866-525-2600. Let Arlington Mortgage be your best first experience.
Well, this is WRIF in Detroit. Peter Werby saying thanks for joining me. Here is our interview.
Thank you very much for joining me. There's been so many explosive exposés about the Bush administration, how they functioned before September 11th, the run-up to the Iraq War, and a lot buried. Remember Enron? Anybody remember that? Maybe that'll get trotted out of the closet one of these days. But the big bombshells come about 9/11 and about the run-up to the war in Iraq and what that was all about. One book making its way up the charts of the New York Times is House of Bush, House of Saud, S-A-U-D. That's the Saudi royal family. And the subtitle of this book, published by Scribner, is The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Families and Dynasties, excuse me. The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Dynasties. Joining me, its author, Craig Unger. Craig Unger, welcome. Craig is joining us from New York City by telephone. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, so much of your thesis is contained in the subtitle, and I'll bet you that a lot of people have seen you on the numerous interviews that you've done on the cable networks, on radio. There was a wonderful one at buzzflash.com that's actually on my website. Could we begin by your impressions of how suddenly the media has warmed to the subject that puts the Bush family and the sitting president in such a bad light? We always say, gee, you know, the media is not critical at all. Suddenly, they're willing to give a lot of space to Craig Unger, saying that there's a relationship between the House of Bush and the House of Saud.
Well, I think it's interesting, though, that it's coming out in the form of books more than anything. This used to be the role of daily journalism. If you go back to Watergate or whatever, it was the Washington Post. But it's coming out in books these days, and these are stories that were kept out in many cases of the daily mainstream press. And I think you've had a very tight-lipped administration until now, at least. It seems now it's starting to leak like crazy, actually. And in the aftermath of 9/11, there was a general air of let's stand behind the president, let's not be too critical. We've gone through a great national tragedy, we've got to stick together. But I felt very strongly that the real story had not been told, that the narrative that emerged out of 9/11 was very simplistic, reductionist. It was sort of terrorist bad, stand behind the president, we're all in this together. And the sense was that this came entirely out of the blue. And well, I don't believe it did come out of the blue. There were events and relationships that led to it.
Well, certainly, let's get into some of those. I should tell our listeners that our guest, Craig Unger, was deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine, and he's written about both the Elder Bush and the Younger Bush for the New Yorker, Esquire, and Vanity Fair. You know when you're hitting gold when you start to be attacked. And much in the way that, of course, all of a sudden it's out of my mind. Richard, the advisor, the terror advisor.
Richard Clark.
I don't know why I'm blocking out. Richard Clark was the victim of this incredible attack on everything from his motives to his personality. And there was a review of your book, House of Bush, House of Saud, in the New York Times this last weekend in their book review section, and it essentially said, well, Craig Unger has some good information, but then he makes leaps that are too broad, that he sees this conspiracy. And as I remember, I don't have it in front of me, but it was done by, I think, wasn't it by the editor of the Financial Times or something?
No, an editor of Foreign Affairs.
Foreign Affairs. Oh, okay. Well, that's right at the core of the U.S. political establishment. What do you make of that, and what do you make of his charge that, sure, that, you know, these are businessmen, these these are people that have had connections over the years, and maybe there is some good old boy corruption going on, but Craig Unger is a conspiracy theorist.
Right. Well, you don't write a political book like this without expecting to be attacked. And, if you read the book, there is no conspiracy. This is business. And what I detail, and no one has challenged this, by the way, is a relationship that is totally unique in the history of American politics. This is the elephant in the living room as far as I'm concerned. Never before has a president of the United States, and I'm really talking about both George Bushes, been so close to another foreign power as the Bushes are with the Saudis. And I trace a total of $1.4 billion in investments and contracts from the Royal House of Saud to businesses in which the Bushes and their allies have major positions. I'm talking about Halliburton, of course, with Dick Cheney, the Carlyle Group with Bush Sr. and James Baker, Harkin Energy, where George W. Bush was on the board of directors. So the Saudis have come in and bailed them out or helped them out financially again and again and again. And this is a unique relationship in both the private and public sector. It's very personal. Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador to the United States, is a very, very close friend of the family. If you look at some of the photos, look at his body language. He's sprawled across an armchair in Crawford, Texas, as if this is not a guy standing in awe of the President of the United States. He's visiting his good friend's buddy, his good friend's son, rather, which is the relationship he has with President George W. Bush. He's visited the family in Kennebunkport and Crawford. They've gone hunting together. This is a very, very close relationship, and it's quite disturbing.
Well, couldn't someone just say, so what? You know, these are the wealthy elite. They're the politically powerful. Saudi Arabia is an important U.S. ally. Well, naturally, you would expect them to be connected, and connected and sometimes in a manner that's a little suspicious. But why a whole book, House of Bush, House of Saud?
Well, the dark side of this, and I think there's a piece of logic that's just been missing from the American conversation, is that, frankly, without the Saudis, I don't think you have 9/11. And remember, 15 out of 19 of the hijackers were Saudis. Remember, Osama bin Laden, the man behind al-Qaeda, is Saudi. Remember, the foundation of al-Qaeda, the way its origins, its infrastructure, the way it's been funded, is largely Saudi in origin. So there's sort of a deal with the devil we've been making. I mean, insofar as Saddam Hussein was a horrible guy, but he had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. And, excuse me, this has distracted a lot of attention from the real war on terror, I believe, and we've let the Saudis get away with murder in terms of not exploring how they finance terror. And as I document in my book, I believe the events immediately after 9/11, in which we let 140 Saudis leave the country without interrogating them, was a really very, very serious lapse in national security.
Well, Craig Unger, I was going to just bring that up because you mentioned that, in fact, point to it very dramatically, that right after September 11th, on September 13th, all air traffic was officially grounded. The bin Laden family, the Saudis that they indicated as necessary to leave the country were all brought to, I mean, you could tell us a little of the story, I don't remember all the details, and left the country with no interviews, essentially left the relatives of the major perpetrator were able to leave the crime scene without any interviews. Yet, please address this first. I forgot, was it Prince Bandar again who said, this is nonsense, we did not leave on the 13th, no one left the country till the 17th when air traffic began again?
Well, again, this is the spin they put on it. And in fact, I'm not saying they left the country. I'm saying the operation started on the 13th. And the point that is essential is that this required White House approval, and it got discussions in the White House. We know this for certain now. If you go back to the 13th, American airspace was completely locked down. I even found a fellow who was waiting for a heart transplant, and the transplanted organ was being flown in from Anchorage, Alaska, to Seattle, Washington, and it was forced down short of its destination because American airspace was that tightly guarded. Yet at the same time on the 13th, planes began to fly, and I traced a total of 8 planes. The first one was from Tampa, Florida, to Lexington, Kentucky. 8 planes stopping in 12 cities, picking up 140 Saudis. About 24 of them were members of the Bin Laden family. And I even found I was able to obtain passenger lists for 4 of these flights. And I was even able to specify that one of the people on the flights allegedly had advanced knowledge of 9/11 and was said to be the intermediary between Al-Qaeda and the Royal House of Saud.
Now, why do you think that you have to, or do you find it unusual that you, Craig Unger, the author that has uncovered all this material, you're in a sense on the defensive? You have to say, gee, no, I didn't misreport this. No, I didn't. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. No, that rather than the Bush administration having to defend itself from the charges that you and other journalists have made.
Right. Well, it really is extraordinary. I think we've had a very docile press. I think the 9/11 Commission has been much stronger than a lot of people have expected, and it's uncovered a lot of very, very interesting stuff, and the narrative put out by the Bush administration has started to unravel, but not entirely, and I think there's a way to go, and I would love it if they would pursue this to some extent. It's remarkable to me the press just won't touch this. A lot of the mainstream press won't. I have had exposure on CNN in being able to put forth this story, but beyond that, the mainstream press, the New York Times, Washington Post, will not touch these
stories. Hmm. Maybe we could get into a little bit of the substance of House of Bush, House of Saud. By the way, I believe last week it was number 8 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Right. It's doing very well. Thank you.
And the subtitle, The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Dynasties. Is this surprising to you at all that this has become a bestseller? I mean, I know every author always hopes it, but most people, if their book is like 3,000th on the Amazon list, that's pretty decent. Number 8 on New York Times is getting up there.
Right. Well, thank you. I always felt this was an essential issue. At the same time, I'm very very much aware that that doesn't guarantee it's going to do terribly well. So you always hope that it does well, and the timing of it was very well thought out. Obviously, we knew there was a presidential election in the works, and the 9/11 Commission was doing its work as well.
Well, now, when we were talking earlier, and you said that you definitely were not a conspiracy theorist, although, you know, there is conspiracies in a sense. If we think of people behind closed doors making decisions that affect the rest of us and saying something different in public, we're told that George W. Bush still receives fairly high marks on the war on terror. Yet there, of course, been the charge that the Iraq War is just a diversion. The idea that that Bush would have neglected investigation into the Saudis at any point simply because of political financial reasons is a charge bordering on an impeachable defense, or offense, rather.
Yeah, it is rather extraordinary how he is starting to get criticism. It's just started to happen recently. You know, I have to wonder if his high polling numbers in recent weeks, relatively high, they have spent a record amount of political advertising in the last month. They spent the Republicans spent over $50 million, which was an all-time record. And even with that huge expenditure, they've sort of been keeping even with John Kerry. So in a way, I'm not sure that they are doing as well, and I do think a sense of him as this unassailable leader is starting to erode, and there's just been too many revelations in the last week from Richard Clark's, whether it's my book, whether it's Bob Woodward's new book. There have been an awful lot of interesting stuff coming out, and for the first time, you start to see the Bush White House very much on the defensive and starting to leak to major newspapers. You can see sources in the Pentagon and the CIA are starting to talk to reporters on a daily basis now.
What do you make of Woodward's charge in the White House denial that Prince Bandar told Bush that he would lower the price of oil and hence allow gasoline prices to drop? And, of course, there was denials all the way around. Do they actually have the power to do that?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. On the one hand, I have to say that I think any president, Republican or Democrat, would want to lower the price of oil.
Sure.
So I'm not that surprised that President Bush would ask it. But there's the larger question to me is this long-term, cozy, long-term relationship that gives the Saudis so much power that they may actually be able to interfere in an American presidential election. I mean, Prince Bandar has the kind of access where he can leapfrog cabinet secretaries in terms of getting access to the President of the United States. I mean, it's extraordinary that he knew. The other big revelation in Woodward's book, of course, is that Prince Bandar knew from the President firsthand that we were going in to Iraq before our own Secretary of State did. So that gives him the kind of access and knowledge that only a cabinet-level person in the United States government, that kind of access, and he's a foreign official. So it's really quite extraordinary. And I think it's worth remembering that this cozy relationship is with a family, let us not forget, whose primary mission is to defend Wahhabi Islam. And in many ways, it's Wahhabi extremists who are behind 9/11.
Well, here is a thesis that in some ways is contradicted by yours in the House of Bush, House of Saud. You would think then that the Saudis would be protected by the Bushes at all costs. On the other hand, some people have said that it is Saudi Arabia that is next in the sights of the neocons that have a long-range strategy of American imperial presence, domination of oil, and the idea that the House of Saud, so corrupt, so authoritarian, and hence so fragile, that there's worry inside of these neoconservative think tanks that it could fall to extremists that are critical of them, and that there is long-range planning, is that first Saddam goes, next the House of Saud goes.
Well, that's very, very scary thinking, and I would hope they've learned something, and maybe they haven't, from Iraq, that when you break an egg, it's very hard to put it back together again, and it's sort of, you break it, you own it, and... Mm-hmm. And look at all the problems we're having in Iraq as it is. In addition, I mean, the House of Saud is in a very difficult position and facing an enormous amount of civil unrest right now. The bombing just today, or yesterday rather, shows that they are being attacked by terrorists. If they were to fall, I think it's true that it would be a potentially disastrous situation, in the sense that whoever replaces them is likely to be even more anti-American. And by that I mean, for all the horrible problems and faults of the House of Saud, we need oil, and we're in bed with them, and it's hard to think of an alternative right now. There is no viable alternative right now. So replacing them, so if at the same time to invade them and topple them is, I think it's lunacy, and I certainly hope we don't go that route. It would essentially start a full-scale regional war with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of troops that would go on forever.
Well, I think probably their great plans for remaking the Middle East have broken on the rock of Iraq. I spoke last week to Toronto Globe and Mail columnist Naomi Klein, who had just returned from Iraq, and she was saying that labeling al-Sadr as a radical sheikh or radical religious leader doesn't appreciate what other forces are waiting in the wings. In the same way, probably, if we think the Saudis are bad, what we could expect if they were to go away. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think there are another 20,000 Shiite militants from Iran that could easily explode in Iraq fairly soon, so it could be a very, very bloody summer.
Craig Unger is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The book is House of Bush, House of Saud, The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Dynasties, and it's published by Scribner, number 8 on the New York Times bestseller list. And almost everybody I know, Craig, when I told them I was going to interview, they said, can I read the book after you do? It is a relationship that heretofore has been not well known to everyone. Tell us about the specifically chosen words that Bush said on national television during the 2000 election that triggered Muslim support. And how much support did he have here in the United States? Did Bush take the Muslim vote?
Yes, he did. And it's a little known story. I think very few people realize that there are actually more Muslim Americans in the United States than there are Jews, for example. And they'd rarely been approached in terms of block voting in the way that politicians often approach different ethnic groups. And, of course, there's nothing wrong, by the way, of pursuing ethnic groups for voting. That's not the issue here. What was interesting is who he ended up campaigning with as a result. And, for example, in March 2000, I actually have a photo in my book of him campaigning with a man named Sami Al-Aryan. Again, he's trying to win the Muslim American vote. And Sami Al-Aryan is now being held on charges of allegedly being a terrorist with the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. In addition, during the presidential debates with Al Gore, it was actually during the second presidential debate, he was then candidate Bush, uttered some rather unusual words. And as we know, he's never been much of a civil libertarian. And suddenly, out of the blue, it wasn't in response to a very relevant question, but he said that he was very much against racial profiling of Arab Americans and the use of secret evidence in trials. Well, that may well be a terrific position to take, by the way. I'm not so much critical of the position as it's a very forthright civil libertarian position. The point is, it was completely out of character with Bush's other remarks on civil libertarian issues. So he had the lowest rating with the ACLU of any candidate in recent memory. But saying those words triggered an immediate response because he was speaking in code, sort of, with regard to various Muslim Americans who were in jail for terrorist activities. And this sort of triggered enormous support for him in the Muslim American community. And that way, he won so many votes as a result of that and the endorsements of all the Muslim leaders in the United States that he won the election in Florida and approved to be he won the Muslim vote and approved to be far more than the necessary margin of victory, where in Florida, of course, the margin was so tiny it was bitterly contested.
Well, Craig Unger, the relationship is so labyrinthine between the House of Bush and the House of Saud that some of this is even difficult to tell on the radio. That's why you have your book. But if you could quickly, if possible, in least complicated form possible, tell us about the relationship between the House of Saud, the Carlyle Group. I'm not even sure everybody knows who that is, and people like James Baker who gravitate between all three.
Well, the Carlyle Group is a fascinating company. It started in 1986 with $0, and now it has over $16 billion. I'm sorry, there's a call waiting. I'm going to let it go.
Okay, thank you.
And the people associated with it have been former himself, who was a senior advisor. James Baker was a senior partner there. Frank Carlucci, who was former Secretary of Defense. Some of the biggest figures in the Reagan-Bush era, including former Prime Minister of England, John Major. It's known as sort of the former President's Club in a way. And it essentially buys companies and sells them, and it was especially strong in the defense sector starting in 1993. And they relied heavily on the Bush's relationship with the Saudis. They went over there, and by that I mean Bush Sr. and James Baker went to Saudi Arabia many times on behalf of the Carlyle Group, and they raised at least $80 million to put in defense, Carlyle investment funds. And but even more importantly, they got over $1 billion in contracts from the Saudis for these defense companies, and suddenly the companies they had bought went through the roof, and they became extremely wealthy. People like James Baker made a fortune off this company, and it's really one of the fastest growing companies in the history of America. But what was particularly disturbing is here you have is who they were doing business with. This again is sort of the Bush clan. When I talk of the House of Bush, I'm talking about this group of people around the Bushes. James Baker is an enormously powerful figure, had almost ran for president himself, and played a key role in four or five administrations. I would say he's one of the two most powerful non-elected officials in America in the last century, the other being Henry Kissinger. He's a man of that magnitude. And they were carving up the Middle East in terms of the oil deals. And they were also dealing with a lot of people who allegedly have inadvertently or not funded Saudi terrorism, Al-Qaeda, who started Islamic charities that have been accused by the United States Treasury Department with funding Al-Qaeda. So here's where things get a little murky, and it's very, very disturbing to me. Here you have the Bushes doing business with wealthy Saudis, and the wealthy Saudis are accused of having funded or being tied to Islamic charities. And it makes you wonder, are they pulling their punches? Are they not asking the tough questions? Are they too close to the Saudis to ask them the tough questions? And why did they apparently okay all these Saudis leaving the country immediately after 9/11? It's a question the Bush administration has not addressed at all. When I call them, they just deny everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the interesting things about that Saudi evacuation, I did try to get a comment from the White House, of course, and they just denied everything on background. People who want to check out whether or not that took place can see the documents. They're posted on my website. I found passenger lists for four of the planes. You can see them on my website at houseofbush.com and see for yourself and ask yourself whether you believe the White House denials or whether or not you believe these documents are real.
Well, Craig Unger, unfortunately, we're out of time, but as I said earlier, that's why the book exists, House of Bush, House of Saud. Just as we leave, I should say, as well, that James Baker's law firm, Baker Botts, represents the Carlyle Group and also represents some of the Saudis in the suit that is brought by relatives of September 11th victims, claiming that the Saudi government played a role. So there's lots in here. The truth is not in pleasant platitudes about offending the world from terror. There's actual issues here that are extremely important. They're covered in the House of Bush, House of Saud, The Secret Relationship Between the World's Two Most Powerful Dynasties. My guest has been its author, Craig Unger. It's published by Scribner. Craig Unger, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Viber Grill. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. To WRIF.com. More Riff Rock is coming right up.
Whoa, this weather's freezing. Wow, looks like you've been in here for a long time, Rick.
Yeah, every time I check it, it shrinks more and more.
You're kidding. It's still shrinking.
Yeah, I kind of wish it would drop all the way down to nothing, but, you know, that's just crazy. It's unrealistic.
Hey, I know it's a personal question, but, you know, you mind if I see it?
You really want to see it?
Well, I'm kind of curious.
Okay, yeah, well, it's right over here. Just take a peek.
Cool. Wow, that did shrink. There's almost nothing left. Hey, but aren't you worried that it's going to, you know, become huge again?
No, CompleteMortgageSearch.com. Lock this payment for me. Then even after they lock your rate, the search isn't over. My payment even shrank since my first quote, and I don't need to move my closing date back.
I doubt they could shrink mine that much. My credit's not very good.
Are you kidding? CompleteMortgageSearch.com shops all kinds of lenders, so good credit or bad, they'll get the best deal for you. Don't close a deal without a free second opinion from CompleteMortgageSearch.com to see if they can shrink that rate for you.
Man, what I wouldn't give to make mine smaller.
Everyone says they have the lowest rates. Let CompleteMortgageSearch.com tell you the truth. CompleteMortgageSearch.com. They do the work, you get the money.
Depression is a disabling condition that will affect one in five people sometime during their life. There are many warning signs of depression that often go unnoticed. Sleeping and eating patterns may change. A simple activity may seem impossible. Decision-making becomes difficult. Depression leaves you feeling hopeless and worthless. You feel tired and lack motivation to get out and do the things you used to enjoy. Life becomes discouraging and nothing feels satisfying. And this may leave you feeling guilty. It's important to understand that depression is a medical condition, not a personality flaw or weakness. Dr. Robert Bielski and the Institute for Health Studies are conducting research on an investigational medication for depression. If you are selected to participate, all research-related care and study medication is provided at no cost by our team of doctors, nurses, and research staff. Call the Institute for Health Studies toll-free at 1-877-908-CARE. That's 1-877-908-CARE.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's spring 2004 semester. Register on the web at www.oaklandcc.edu or visit any of OCC's 5 convenient campuses to register for your choice of classes in literally hundreds of subjects. Classes like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you're a four-year university student and want to get some classes out of the way before you go back in the fall, or if you just want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Oakland Community College at www.oaklandcc.edu. Get anywhere from here.
Classes begin May 10th.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to a doctor who's developed a point system based on lifestyle and other factors to predict your lifespan.
We know that both men and women, when they're married, they have a tendency to live longer. They get a +3 points.
Oh, I've heard
more,
that.
More likely to exercise, more likely to go out, more likely to eat a well-balanced meal.
Yeah, Mike just wants his points for being married, but he does none of the things that married people do that make them live longer. He still thinks he's going to take the 3 years.
Believe me, yeah, being married is the only plus in my categories. Believe me, it's nice. This is a sea of minus.
But you can't take the 3 years when you do none of the things that married people get the points for.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
Hey, Riff.
101.1
WRIF. Shouting at me.
It was about busybodies, people that don't have any business of their own, so that they're always butting into other people's business. Well, this this affects this in a very odd way. The book is Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. And our guest is Wayne R. Besson, and he has written this book for Harrington Park Press. And Wayne Besson is a nationally recognized advocate for gay and lesbian rights. He's been a frequent guest on leading news and political talk shows. He's been on the NBC Nightly News, CNN's Talkback Live. He's even faced Bill O'Reilly. He's in our studio. Wayne Besson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
You know, maybe what we ought to do is set the terms of this, and I think I could summarize it by saying that what you're doing is shattering the myth that gay people can change into heterosexuals through prayer and therapy. Now, when all of a sudden did this come about?
Well, these ministries have been around since the early 70s. However, most people didn't know about them till 1998 when 15 religious right groups sunk $1 million into these groups to prove that gay people could pray away the gay through going to a preacher and a little bit of expensive therapy. Now, these right-wing groups like Focus on the Family, the Family Research Council, the Christian Coalition, took out full-page ads in the USA Today, the Washington Post, the New York Times, among others, that featured so-called ex-gays. And since then, this has been on the cultural landscape. And my job, while I used to work with the Human Rights Campaign, was to show that these groups didn't work, and they ruined lives. Now, I think I've been pretty successful when you look at some of the failures I've uncovered.
As a gay man, I'm making the correct assumption.
Yes.
Yes, that when you hear gay sexuality referred to as a lifestyle or a choice, because that really goes to the heart of what we're talking about, what's your reaction to that?
Well, it's infuriating, and you were so right. The extreme right groups look at the polls, and they see that people who think homosexuality is a casual choice, like what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat for breakfast, are against laws that protect us from discrimination. Those who believe it is not a choice support gay rights laws. The religious right, seeing these polls, said we're going to jump on this ex-gay bandwagon and attack gay people and try to convince Americans that it is a casual choice.
Mm-hmm. My friend Jeff Montgomery, who's head of the Triangle Foundation.
Great work.
Yeah, they do. He says, I thought that'd be a good idea. I would choose to be gay so then I could be discriminated in employment, attacked by homophobes physically and verbally. Where does the notion come from within this right-wing religious view that gay life is sexuality is something that is casually accepted as a way to kind of party or be irresponsible, I guess?
Well, I mean, first, it's definitely not a choice. People can only choose to accept who they are. They can choose to be in the closet. Now, the right wing has to embrace this because it doesn't fit into their extremist theology that gay people can exist. We have to be heterosexuals who are behaving badly, because that's what they really believe we are. They don't. If you think about it, they don't believe there's such thing as a gay person. It's a heterosexual misbehaving, and they have to come up with that, because if not, then they have to accept, wait a second, these people are here, maybe God made them this way, what do we do now? It means we have to accept them or just be mean. Well, these ex-gay ministries and trying to show it's a choice is a lot better than this whole fire and brimstone routine they're having. It's really a kinder, gentler form of homophobia by presenting it as a casual choice.
Well, of course, there has been thousands of years of meanness within the Judeo-Christian tradition. Yeah. A large question, but since you've been an advocate, like for the Human Rights Campaign, you have your finger on the pulse of this. Gay life in America, is it easier now than it has been, say, in a generation?
Yes. It's divided sort of two ways right now. And the way it's divided, the major cities and in parts of Detroit, Washington, New York, West Hollywood, it's in San Francisco, it's very easy to be openly gay in a lot of quarters. I mean, there's still egregious examples of discrimination, people getting fired from their jobs, kicked out of their homes, but by and large, you can live openly gay and not have a problem. Now, there's the other America, the one that it's not just difficult to be gay, but maybe to be of another religion or to be any other type of minority. And people who are in these types of very conservative environments still find it extraordinarily difficult to come out, and that's what we're working to change. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's going to happen. And the problem with these ex-gay ministries, it slows down the coming out process. It makes, instead of people accepting in these more conservative environments their gay friends and family, they say, well, why don't we just send you off to this ministry? Of course, they don't want to talk about the disasters and failures that have taken place in these ministries.
I sure want to talk about that. What about successful stereotypes of gays? For one thing, as long as you have an adjective, as long as you talk like in Ferndale, the largest vote getter in the last election was gay. And so you would say gay councilman, or you would say black councilman. As long as you have this adjective, that's not just councilman or councilwoman, there still is a recognition of this is outside of the mainstream of the norm.
And we're going to see that until it becomes boring. And there's just nothing you can do about that. People say they hate labels, but we are a people of language. And you must be able to describe people one way or the other. It's unfortunate that that gets stuck. But there's really what other way around it is there going to be until it becomes something that's no big deal. And maybe that might happen in 15 or 20 years. Maybe we won't have black city councilmen or gay city councilmen. But that certainly isn't the case today. That's why we just got to keep on fighting. I'll just also go back to when you said, what's it like to be gay today? You look at all the young men and women who are coming out at so much earlier ages these days. It's great. They don't have to play this game, and they don't have to try to be people they aren't and have phony marriages and sham weddings to try to protect themselves. They can be who they are at 13, 14 years old, and that is a huge advantage. And a lot of that has to do with the communications of today. Before, when I came out in 1988, when I was 18, people used to always say, I thought I was the only one. They don't say that anymore. They know through television, through the media, through the internet in particular, no matter where they are, both in the U.S. and the world, that there are gay people who are happy, are living productive lives as openly gay people, and that they are not alone. And that has been the most incredible advance in our movement's history.
There's even a National Coming Out Day, which was October 11th. My guest is Wayne Besson. He's written the book Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. We haven't even gotten to that yet. I have one more question about the way stereotypes previously about gay people were negative. There was
now we're dressing everybody in Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. How things change. Of course, I could use a little help with that.
You look pretty sharp. Listen.
Well, I was dressed by a team.
Okay, there you go. How about this? I mean, how does this make you feel? Rather than a negative stereotype, someone we noticed a house went up for sale, and then I asked this older neighbor, I said, who bought it? And she said, a couple of gay guys. She said, that's wonderful. The house is going to be, you know, so it's going to be so well taken care of. So there's sort of this, it's still a stereotype, but but it's positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's changed a lot. I think it has to do with the acceptance of gender roles and difference changing. I mean, it used to be a big deal, a woman in the military or as a firefighter, and men were supposed to be a certain way all the time. And I think that's very constricting. I think some women want to be, you know, police women and firefighters, and you have a lot of men who want to cut hair who might just be heterosexual, and they felt constrained before. So it's good that we're breaking out and allowing people to come out, not just as gay or straight, but as who they are and what they want to do so they can pursue their dreams.
All right, let's get to the core of Anything But Straight. And by the way, the website for this book is
anythingbutstraight.com. Again, anythingbutstraight.com. Give you all the information you need on this topic.
All right, and I'll have that on my website as well. Now, the idea that gay people can change into heterosexuals through prayer and therapy, people that have looked at the cover of Newsweek and other publications have said, praise the Lord. In fact, it's true. You can pray. What did you say? Pray the little
pray away the gay. Yeah. Amen, brother.
Well, here you have testimony of the individuals that said, I was gay. I was going down the wrong path. I went to God or Jesus, and it cured me. So, end of story.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the first second you walk into one of these ex-gay ministries, they call you an ex-gay, whether you've changed or not. But you tell them, you say, wait a second, I'm still gay. They go, well, of course you are, because you won't say you're not gay. So they have you say that you're heterosexual, even if you don't feel that way, because if you keep repeating it, they tell you God will reward you for that faith and make you the straight person you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really name and claim it theology. And so anytime you express doubt about changing, they say, well, it's just because you don't have enough faith. It's about blaming the person involved. And that's why it's very destructive. That's why these ministries and these therapies are rejected by every respected medical and mental health organization in the world. The APA, the AMA, they all say this doesn't work and causes anxiety, depression, and self-destructive behavior. And it's backed by the very fact that every founder of every ex-gay ministry has either been caught in a scandal, such as being at a gay bar, or rejects these ministries today and say they don't work.
Really? Well, I was going to ask, but you kind of answered it already. I was going to say, if these people are just kind of off on a loopy idea, so what? I mean, you've written a 300-page engaging book. So what? But you say that it leads to a lot of personal misery.
It leads to people wanting to commit suicide. It leads to people trying to be who they're not and becoming very depressed. And then they become even more depressed because they keep promising God will change, and when they fail, they feel like they've let down God.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do to a person who believes they're going to go to hell unless they don't change? It creates a person who is shattered as a human being, a spirit that is crushed. It really creates a living hell on earth. You know, some people believe that they're going to go to hell. So they say, in order to go to heaven, I'm going to live a life of hell on earth by trying to be who I'm not. It's like an actor playing a role. People can convince themselves that the lines they read are true for a while, but eventually, like any play, the final curtain comes crashing down at the end, and the actor has to take off the mask and be themselves again. And that's what we see with these groups. At the very end, that curtain comes crashing down, and all these leaders who said they have changed have to take off that mask and say, you know what, I really was gay all along. And in fact, we've seen, again, leader after leader, even right now in the Detroit area, there's an ex-gay leader who has been at more tubs than Mr. Clean, meaning bathhouses. You know, and we really want to offer this individual a golden opportunity. In fact, we've showered him with many golden opportunities to come out and say, in fact, that he is not the ex-gay he is proclaimed to be in the media. I think it would be a very healing opportunity and a choice this person should make. before they end up as the next scandal, like John Polk or Michael Johnston.
Well, tell us those stories about John Polk and Michael Johnston. I actually don't know the stories.
John Polk was the undisputed leader of the ex-gay ministries. He was on the cover of Newsweek with his so-called ex-lesbian wife, Anne. He was on Good Morning America, Oprah, and 60 Minutes, and he said, I can change. I'm living proof that one can go from homosexual to heterosexual. Well, I was sitting in my dining room one night trying to figure out what the first chapter was going to be for my book, Anything But Straight, and I get a call from my colleague from HRC who's in this bar. He says, Wayne, get over to the bar right now. The leader of the ex-gay ministries, John Polk, is hitting on me and trying to buy me cocktails. And I ran down there as fast as I could, and then I took my camera, and I couldn't believe it. I got into the bar, and there he was, John Polk, the most famous ex-gay, the ex-gay spokesperson for all these white right-wing groups, was in there holding a cocktail, having a gay old time. And I saw him, and he freaked out, and I took his picture, and he was kicked out of the ministries for a while because of this. And he worked for Focus on the Family and Exodus International. And it's just the latest in a series of scandals. Look, the very co-founders of the world's largest ex-gay ministry, who used to travel all around the country saying they've changed, admitted to each other on a plane ride to Indianapolis that they actually loved each other and divorced their wives and had a commitment ceremony. Another success for the ex-gay ministries. The founder of Homosexuals Anonymous, sort of a 12-step program to cure people, this guy used to have phone sex with the people he was trying to help and gave them nude massages. He would tell them, I'm only giving you a nude massage to try to desensitize you to the powers of the flesh. It's like a bad pickup line at the bar at 3 a.m.
Well, am I mistaking this, Wayne Besson, or is there a bit of relish on your part in all of this? I mean, because, I think at the core of your book, Anything But Straight, there's an understanding of the importance of this issue, but still there's
I enjoy every time we bust an ex-gay leader, and I've brought down two of the top three, and I'll tell you about Michael Johnston in a minute, because that's horrifying. But I do enjoy it, not because I want to hurt the individual involved, but because every time we bring one of these people down, those who are suffering from these lies that are put forth by Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson can see the truth and help escape these horrible ministries, this ex-gay trap. And I get letters all the time from people through the work I've done who have escaped and are leading happy, fulfilling lives. You see these ministries tell people. They scare them. They say, if you come out of the closet as openly gay, you're going to die of AIDS. They say, if you come out of the closet, you're going to die alone and be miserable and unhappy. Gay life is terrible, they tell them. And if, of course, you don't know anyone is openly gay, you're likely to believe these people. So when I help these folks come out and they have that life partner and they have that long-term happiness that they were told could never happen and they thank me for it, I really do enjoy it. So, yeah, I hope we can get as many leaders as possible to either come out or be caught in a scandal, such as the one in Detroit who is making a mockery of both the ministries and, I think, God, quite frankly.
I wonder if he's listening.
I would hope he would be.
Wayne Besson, let me ask you this. You mentioned sort of the process of going to these ex-gay ministries. Have you been to one sort of undercover?
I've been to
or
many.
Or openly?
I have been both openly ex-gay, I'm just kidding, at these ministries, and undercover as well.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that goes on there is so bizarre.
Like what?
Well, they make you wear a rubber band. And they tell you, whenever you see somebody who you're attracted to, snap the rubber band, it'll snap you out of
the spell. Couldn't it have the opposite effect, though, too?
Well, it just gives you a big red wrist and lets the people know that you're attracted to them, I guess. Another thing is they try to have touch football games for gay men to butch them up.
Really?
And lipstick seminars for lesbians.
Aren't there lipstick lesbians?
But that's exactly right. It creates lipstick lesbians and gay men who know the difference between a first down and a touchdown. But they're still gay. Another thing they do is called intrauterine memory recovery.
Whoa. Wait. Run that by us slowly.
Intrauterine memory recovery.
Okay.
You see, they try to find out how you became gay. They say, you know, something happened while you were in your mother's womb. She was having a bad time. But if we hypnotize you and you can have a flashback, you can remember what happened in your mother's womb, therefore you know how you became gay.
Mm-hmm.
It's these kind of weird, bizarre techniques. Here's my favorite. One of the leading reparative therapists, Dr. Nicholas, he says that in order to become straight, you should drink Gatorade as a guy and call other other men dude, because that's supposed to make you macho. Hey, dude, yeah, I'm feeling straight already. It's a circus act. Another one of the theories is even straight men can turn gay if they suffer failure or defeat. They will start having gay fantasies. And, of course, my team, the Washington Wizards, back home, the basketball team, has had many losing years, and I figured I locked in the locker room and wondered if any of them were gay, and they weren't, so I don't know about that theory. If anybody should be gay from that theory, it's my Wizards.
Right. And the Detroit Lions have won a couple in a row. Hey,
they're butchers. They're becoming heterosexual for these victories.
With these ministries, I mean, I can't imagine that they have great numbers of gay men or lesbian women attracted to them. So, I mean, what's the kind of the structure of it? We were talking about these seem to be generated by the far-right Christian movement.
It's a sham and a front. A lot of people enter the doors of these ministries, but they leave right after that. It's sort of like a turnstile at a Rolling Stones concert. One after the other, they come and go.
Mm-hmm.
But very few people stay for a long period of time because they realize it's a sham. Now, the religious right makes it seem like they're much bigger than they are because they take out million-dollar advertising campaigns. They put $100,000 ads in USA Today. But if you look at the ministries themselves, the right wing doesn't give any money to the actual ministries. It's all sizzle, but they don't care about the steak. Because even Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and James Dobson know these ministries don't work. But it serves their political agenda, so they'll buy expensive ads. Now, the problem here is that people who really believe they're going to hell can stay to these things up to 10, 15 years. So there is a core group of people who are having their lives destroyed. And it's one of my missions with my book, Anything But Straight, and with my work when I was with the Human Rights Campaign, to help these people, help bring them out of the closet and live the rich, fulfilling lives that I know they can lead.
Mm-hmm. The book, Anything But Straight, also has a corresponding website, anythingbutstraight.com. Subtitle is Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. My in-studio guest is Wayne Besson, the author, who's been on a multi-city tour. And I'm trying to frame this question in a way that is deeper than it sounds. I was going to say, how are you received? In other words, you're countering a very destructive myth in the gay community. So is that well appreciated? Is this book and your authorship and the work in this a help to people that have made the courageous step in some areas of coming out?
It's been well received everywhere I've been. I've been getting good crowds everywhere. It's been very exciting. And also, mm-hmm. The religious right hates it. And that excites me because this costs them a lot of money. My book hurts them financially because they make a lot of money by exploiting gay people through these so-called ex-gay ministries. In fact, when I found and photographed John Polk at the gay bar that evening, Focus on the Family for the first time lost money in recent memory.
You were going to tell the story about the other guy, Michael Johnston.
Yeah, I was just about to talk about Michael Johnston, who was the star of the religious rights television campaign. He said he had found Jesus and escaped homosexuality through the power of Jesus. And he was on this TV campaign they had that went all over the country. He was also part of their print advertising campaign, a real ugly ad with the headline, From Innocence to AIDS, meaning he had contracted HIV.
Hmm.
I had gotten a tip from somebody in Virginia Beach that said Mr. Johnston, the ex-gay spokesperson who also worked for D. James Kennedy from Coral Ridge Ministries and Jerry Falwell, this ex-gay leader was having unsafe sex with many men in Virginia Beach. I went down on these tips to Virginia Beach to investigate, and in August, I found, unfortunately, that these rumors were true. I have a videotape, in fact, of him having an orgy. And
wait a minute, how do you get
it? Didn't look very ex-gay. And
well, how do you get a videotape?
I can't disclose that.
All right.
But it exists, and I have it, and it's quite illuminating, considering this was Jerry Falwell's prime example of how you can change. And I talked to one young man that Michael Johnston, the ex-gay leader, slept with,
mm-hmm.
who he lied to this guy about his HIV status.
Mm.
And this guy told me, Michael Johnston ruined my life.
You know, actually, dumb old me, I'm kind of getting the implications of this. If you're HIV positive and you're having unprotected sex, you're a good chance.
A felon in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
and
is
this
true.
Is and this is in your book, Anything But Straight?
This came right after we published. I will update it with this. This is the latest scandal. Michael Johnson at a Virginia Beach, who was, instead of being honest, though, Jerry Falwell and D. James Kennedy and the American Family Association, all these groups, you know what they did? They shuffled them off to a sex addiction facility in Kentucky.
Hmm.
Didn't tell anybody. Did not make this public about his disaster until I found out about it. And then they had to send press releases out about this. But, you know, it's funny how they say they're so moral and so self-righteous, but they didn't care about the public health. They didn't care about people. They didn't care about setting the record straight, which is the only thing they can set straight. And they still couldn't get that straight.
And so if he comes and sues us, you've got the evidence.
Oh, yeah, we've got more than enough evidence. We've got witnesses, we've got a tape, and they've already admitted that the religious right has sent out press releases, and this has been on the news before.
Now, Wayne Besson, the religious right, as I said at the beginning, you know, with William Burroughs' quote about having no business of their own, they get into everybody else's business, so they're always psychoanalyzing you and other members of our gay community, and any sense of them? I mean, one of the things that always occurs to me is that anyone who is so taken up with the sexuality of other people, what does that tell us? What does that tell us about their fascination with their concern or whatever they have for 12 or 13% of our country?
I think anybody who's obsessed with what gay people are doing probably want to enter that arena themselves. I mean, why else would some supposedly straight guy go around spending his time going, you know, following people around in gay bars? We got a guy, Peter LaBarbera, who worked for the Family Research Council on Concerned Women, who likes to go in leather and take pictures of naughty behavior in certain gay bars, and it's okay, I could see him going once. But when you keep going back, I mean, come on now. There's a reason. It's very bizarre. And they can't figure these people out. But I've always thought that they can't take temptation. And the way a lot of these people want to stamp out their own temptation is by passing repressive laws that would really take away any of their own fascination with any given topic, whether it's a nude beach or gay rights.
Well, Donna Redwing, who's a gay activist, says the book, Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth, she says, sheds light on one of the most insidious movements of the radical right. My guest has been Wayne Besson. The book is Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. You can go to anythingbutstraight.com. Also, a link will be on my page as well, my website. It's published by Harrington Park Press. Wayne, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riff's Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Party just doesn't stop at Leopard's Lounge and Broil, Windsor's number one gentleman's club. Every week at Leopard's Lounge, they bring you new girls from all over the world, so it never gets boring. And these girls are hot. Plus, unlike other gentlemen's clubs, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking. It's the best entertainment value around. This Tuesday night, join Mike Walters from the Riff's Drew and Mike Show for a special Tuesday night Riff Bash. Mike will have tons of giveaways and lots of other special surprises. Come on, guys. You work hard. You deserve a night out. So make sure you make it to Leopard's Lounge and enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer and sexy, beautiful women from all around the world. We'll see you this Tuesday night at Leopard's Lounge in Windsor for a special Riff party. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil.
girl.
Okay, so now my friend Barry wants to buy a motorcycle, a really big motorcycle. But he's a working guy, trying like me to pinch his pennies. Then all our friends told Barry, buy a bike at Motown, buy a bike at Motown. So Barry, who stays home nights pinching his pennies, thinks he can get the better deal if he shops the competition. Those other dealers showed him what he could get with his pennies.